can make it go. I'm sorry your call dropped, Susan. When a line opens up, hopefully you can get back in.
Hey.
Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey.
Hey, Juanita.
Michelle Bachmann also for lowering minimum wage.
Why am I not surprised?
That's very Christian of her, ain't it?
Well, isn't it? Now, okay, let's go through this real quick, Juanita. Isn't there that parable out there that says that a man hired a man in the morning for an amount, and he hired a man at noon for an amount, the same amount, and he hired a man, and at the end of the day, the guy came back and said, hey, wait a minute. That guy got paid for two-thirds less of the work that I did for the same money.
Yeah.
I never understood. What does that parable mean?
I can't tell you, Bob. I have to think about it.
I think it's meant to illustrate the fact that all shall be equal in the kingdom of God or something, but it certainly isn't an accurate representation of fairness on earth.
Yeah. Anyway, I didn't hear the first part of the program.
Mm-hmm.
In and out. And I wondered if you got any of the hurricane?
No. All we got was a gentle breeze in late August that was unseasonably pleasant.
Yeah. Well, you know, now there's a big hike.
Yeah, and they're saying that Barack Obama tried to terrify America.
Yeah.
How about trying to get America? Bonnie, you live in hurricane country. You know what happens when people don't prepare, right?
Yeah.
They die.
When I was growing up, yeah. When I was little and all, and was growing up and we had some hurricanes, and we would listen. You know, they're complaining about the coverage, too, but we would listen to the radio till the batteries or whatever we had. I think, electricity would go off again.
Yeah.
Then we couldn't.
And then the batteries eventually go out, too.
Yeah. But I listened to that. And they did do some repeating. But did you see what happened to Vermont?
Oh, it was awful.
They said every road in the state is affected.
And, of course, Eric Cantor says too bad for Vermont because, you know, Eric Cantor hates Vermont because they've got that communist medicine socialized up there and stuff, right?
Well, yeah, and they got those communist people up there, too. Bernie Sanders and so forth. But
you know, it's not just Eric Cantor. Is Ron Paul on something, Juanita? I mean, here's a man. I mean, let's just for background sake, here's a man whose congressional district includes Galveston, Texas.
Oh yeah.
Okay. Now this guy says he wants to go back to 1900. When we all took care of each other, and that FEMA is a drag on the budget. But he specifically said 1900, Juanita, and that's very important in this discussion.
I heard him, yeah.
Now, in 1900, the worst hurricane ever to hit the United States came ashore at Galveston.
Yeah.
It killed between 6,000 and 12,000 human beings.
Yeah.
We still don't know for sure how many. And that is what Ron Paul wants to go back to? You know, I've got an email from one of those weird right-wing emails asking me to interview somebody who is pushing the idea that Democrats should switch over and be Republicans in the primary and go and vote for Ron Paul. I mean, could you get a Democrat? I don't know. Maybe you could. Could you get a Democrat to go vote for somebody that likes it when 6,000 to 12,000 people die in a hurricane? I mean, that's that just makes my eyeballs roll back in my head and go, because.
Well, we'll see how many more Republicans come out repeating what he said. I'm sorry, I'm stuttering, but you know Rubio.
Yeah.
From Florida.
Yeah, Mark Rubio, the teabagger.
Did you hear his little speech about Social Security?
Oh no.
Well, he said that it was to discourage people, and we needed to go back to where, you know, people helped one another out. Well, I can remember where people helped one another out, but they couldn't afford to pay all their bills and you know, give them a standard of my month. You know what I'm saying?
I sure do.
But they got that kind of, and he, when he was running for election, he was talking about how, you know, his folks came from Cuba and how Social Security really helped them out, you know, the parents and all, you know.
But we've just outgrown it now. Is that what it is?
I don't know, but it's really, you know. And they're going to really come out with trying to say that when we passed Obamacare, you know what they call it, they took out millions or billions from the program, and they're going to try to make people believe that. And you know how they do. They just keep repeating it.
You know how, I don't know if you've noticed this or not, you want to know how stupid some American people are, Juanita. The United States Postal Workers Union is having to run ads right now just telling people, and for the most part, you've got to figure it's teabaggers they're talking to. Hey, your taxes don't pay to run the Postal Service, okay?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because apparently teabaggers don't like the post office. For heaven's sakes! I mean, doesn't that just make you want to the post office?
Yeah,
really?
It does. Yeah, it's amazing. And
I mean, because these clowns, these teabaggers and whatever, I guess they've never actually priced what it costs to send a letter via Federal Express or UPS or any of those other companies.
Oh, yeah, or anything.
You know what? I had to do that one time, and I did it. And I was out like $20.
Yeah.
And I vowed that day that I would never complain about the price of the United States Postal Service postage again so long as I live, and I haven't.
Yeah.
Because
it
really,
what it is now, you know.
Yeah, but that's the point. Even if it's 60 cents a stamp,
yeah,
that's still something like, what, $9.40 less than what it would cost to send it?
Yeah.
3 days with UPS?
Way over, yeah. I didn't know that was what I wanted to tell you the other day about Rubio. And, you know, he's, Jeb's bad boy, or whatever you want to
call it. Anointed one, or?
Yeah, but old Jeb, you know, he'll get his finger in the pie. You know, if they ever
stay off small aircraft?
Hey, Matt, go hang in there.
Oh, don't joke.
Yeah, I shouldn't, because sometimes I say something and joke and it'll come true. I guess that's superstition, right?
Sometimes it's observation of known phenomena.
But the hurricane, one thing I wanted to say about that, and this is bad of me to say this, but I think a lot of people might think of it. You know how many people call in and say, well, those people in New Orleans should have left. They should have gone to some place, safe place. I wonder how many people who got into this hurricane deal might not have prepared or couldn't prepare. You know, it costs money. I heard somebody on the TV talking about how much money it might cost you to go somewhere else. And did you see those senior citizens? I think they were in New Jersey, and they were going to write it out. Because the alternative, did you see that?
I did.
And the alternative was, they didn't know where they would go, what would be there. And I know too many times where you go and it's kind of like a mini dome, you know, like it was in New Orleans. Like mini domes, you know what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
Get a bunch of people packed in a place, and how many people have decent toilet habits, you know? And how many of them
in circumstances like that, the real
bunch of people.
The real test is in circumstances like that. For instance, during the Fukushima disaster, which continues to unfold in Japan, Japanese social structure held up because of the way it is, as it was explained to us by, among others, you know, Robert there in Japan.
Yeah.
Social structures held up because of the depth and focus of them. The United States, no. Things fall apart real fast because we are a self-centered nation. Me, right?
Yeah. And it's, but there's a lot of reasons why sometimes you can't go. Now, I know out where I live, heavy crime area, but well, of course, the whole country is. I have people say, why don't you move from there? Well, I'm used to this place. This is my home, you know.
Right, it's the difference between the devil, it's the difference between the devil you know and the devil you don't.
And you could go to these gated communities, and there's plenty of crime going on there. Not just among the residents, but people that go in and out. You always have somebody going in and out of those places.
Certainly, without a doubt.
And anyway, a lot of times, you know, and I know that it's bad when you get a water gun up to your eyeballs, you know, which that happens sometimes and has happened. I want to tell you something before I forget, and then I'll shut up. I found out Yahoo, I called them a lie, on their front page, reporting on the hurricane.
Mm-hmm.
I stayed up and watched that till it started repeating a bunch of stuff. Anyway, they were talking about, they had, like it was news, that the hurricane had hit New York City, and they had high winds and flooding and all. Well, that was about 3 hours before it did hit New York City. And it did.
They had it pre-written.
They didn't have the had the flooding. You know, they didn't have the high winds like they reported. And they reported before it even went there.
Right. You know, just getting things out of the way, making you right.
So, whatever you read on Yahoo News, sometimes it ain't correct.
Or they get a little ahead of themselves.
Yeah. Well, that was a little bit ahead of themselves. But.
Or perhaps a lot ahead of themselves.
Yeah. Okay, well, one more thing I wanted to ask you. I've been thinking about this because I was asked a question on a survey. What would I do to cut down government spending? And, you know, I was come to the conclusion, what do we need the Congress for?
Now, see, the first place I go is the Pentagon.
Well, that's a good definition.
What do we need a military that costs as much as the... that costs as much as the number 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10 militaries combined.
Oh, yeah. Well, my reasoning on the Congress is that most of them, if they're Republicans, they want to take away everything they can from us. If they're Democrats, they don't want nothing to change, and so they'll go along with the Republicans because they don't want to fight. We have a few, very few, and I can't even think of them now except the Black Caucus. I'm in the Black Caucus. And not all of them. And when the Senate has said Bernie Sanders.
That's about it.
And that's about it. Well, I'm going to let you go, Bob.
All right, well, you have them.
And you're not going to be there, you're not going to be on there tomorrow night?
No, tomorrow, Wednesday, and Thursday, I'm not there.
Okay. And I do want to say to you, Tracy, that I like Maxine Waters, too, and if she goes to Washington and meets her, tell her that there's one Southern gal that appreciates those people in the Black Caucus. That
stand up. Well, I have, you know what, I feel the same way. There's very few people in the Congress I feel like actually represent our interests. And, I got no problems with Maxine Waters. And I got, I consider her in the same light that I consider Dennis Kucinich, formerly Alan Grayson when he was in there. There is a small handful of others as well.
Yeah. And they say what they want to about us, but even the Blue Dogs, they just think Alan Grayson's terrible.
Yeah, he's mean.
But anyway, that can also tell her that also Cornel West is one of my heroes.
Okay. Well, maybe she may be listening, although it's my understanding she's also in, she's in San Francisco this week. I saw a tweet a few minutes ago that she's in San Francisco, Tracy is. I saw her tweeting a few minutes ago that she was in some sort of, some sourdough bakery or something. I immediately felt terribly, terribly jealous.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. You have a good night, Juanita.
Okay. Good night.
We'll talk soon. Bye now.
All right. Bye-bye.
Juanita calling from Central Florida. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey, this is, that speech that Bachman did was recent, right? Because she did say she's also running for president.
Yeah, I mean.
How the hell, I mean, okay, is this an exercise in, you know, speaking to her so-called base, and then she plans on distancing herself from this? I mean, because it's an outrage that some candidate for political office in this country is up there talking about, you know, Jesus and God. And, I mean, it's too much. I couldn't even believe I was hearing that. It was way, way too much.
You know what? That's even that's even way out there past George W. Bush, isn't it?
Well, yeah, no, it's just no. She did. I mean, she's I'm speechless because between her and that other freak, the more I see of this Terry person, the more I'm like, are you kidding me with this? And again, no wonder Texas is in the state that it's in. Good Jesus, they've had a decade of this freak.
And remember, before that, they had a decade of W.
Yeah, no, but the thing is with the parody, I mean, just the outright lies that are never challenged. And this man is talking about Social Security is some sort of cruel Ponzi scheme or it's unconstitutional and blah, blah, blah. And it's just kind of like these people never address, you know, what do you expect to replace it with? Because you sure to hell aren't going to allow all the millions of people, a third of them who are not old, to not have access to this insurance program. You may disagree with me, but even if Republicans come into power, they are not going to get rid of those programs. Mark my words. Now, they may cut every program for the poor, because doing anything for the poor is okay. That's fine.
Yeah.
But they're not going to destroy. I don't believe it. I don't know what game they're running, but there's too many Republicans who get the program. You see, who get these programs. That's the thing that I'm constantly looking at now. It's just like, no, I don't know who they're talking to, because anyone who pays any attention to the budget of the U.S. government knows that the vast majority of it are these insurance programs and the military. That's it. The rest of it is so small that, you know what I'm saying? So I'm just starting to get really confused, because I don't care if Obama loses and these other people all come in. There's no way. Because what are they going to do with the millions of people who are going to lose that transfer payment? I'm just talking to you. I'm not talking to you as a partisan or nothing.
No.
How is the country going to function when the reality of what the U.S. government is what I just described?
My only, and I'm going to respond to you, Sandra, not as a partisan. My only response is that I think you are predicating your query on what may turn out to be, I would like to be wrong about this, but you may be starting from a false premise. And I maintain that you kind of are, because I don't think that these people actually want a government. I don't think Rick Perry was kidding when he was talking secession.
Well, okay, no, I understand, but what I'm saying is that when they come up against what they're actually talking about doing, you know, the actual mechanics and, you know, taking apart these three safety net programs, or these three insurance programs, Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. I'm not saying I'm going to wait around to see how they pull it off, but I'm a bit skeptical now because of how these programs came into being, how long they've been in place, how the money is generated, i.e. this tax that all workers have to pay. You know, I don't know. I'm not saying it's like their abortion argument, the same thing where they would never want to ban abortion because it's too good to them in the electoral process. You know what I mean?
Right.
Likewise, I can't, you know, because there's too many white people who depend, I'm sorry, I'm going there, too many white people who depend on these programs. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
So, I'm quite happy to hear your explanation, you know, but I'm just really starting to be a little bit curious about how their dogma is going to translate into
these
programs.
This could be one of those situations, Sandra, where they're finding out how difficult it is to serve two masters.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
What I mean by that is, I read an article over the weekend, I think it was over at Truthout, that said it was something like the history of hating Social Security or something like that. And it was really quite an educational experience because, it, among other things, it put the assaults on Medicare and Social Security and Medicaid in perspective over time. And it showed the genesis of these think tanks making arguments about eliminating it.
Yeah.
And so when you consider the amount of money that flows through those things and the amount of clout that they now have via whether it be 527s or, you know, just outright Citizens United money.
Yeah.
They say they want an end to it, so these people who are beholden to them have to give lip service to that.
Okay. I understand, but there's also, if you look at the marketplace for these programs, I mean, how many millions of people, I mean, businesses and whatnot, are sustained by these programs? And so I'm saying, like, they say one thing about what government ain't, but we know what it is, and they goddamn it know what it is, too. This is what I mean about the disingenuousness of it. Give me a goddamn break.
Oh, actually, look, yeah, no more scooter chair ads on cable TV, because those companies go away.
And
no more Wilfred Brimley hustling diabetic supplies.
And nursing homes. Hello, they're all privatized. I'm sure they have an interest group to bark for them. You see what I'm saying? I just think that, don't get me wrong, I think every program, including Pell Grants, any sort of program to help poor people, could be just wiped away if these people get in the power. Now, I'm quite happy to assume that that is the goal, because poor people, the next stop is jail. You understand what I'm saying?
Well, that is a dirt.
Yeah, death or jail, and they don't give a F about poor people. And I think that is the case. But these, you know, what's left of the middle class and these old people and people's parents and, maybe people who are disabled, who depend on these insurance programs, and I refuse to call them anything else now but insurance programs.
No, they're damn sure not entitlement programs.
It's just a joke, you know, because there is a dedicated stream, in case they seem to forget that. Once again, people like Rick Perry, it's like, bitch, what you talking about? People pay into this shit on the hour, every hour. What are you talking about? It's a Ponzi scheme. You see what I mean? I'm just sort of... I don't mean to sound...
Well, among other things, it displays the fact that Rick Perry doesn't have the first damn clue what a Ponzi scheme is.
Oh, God. Well, anyway, I don't know. I just am sort of, I'm just trying to look at the landscape. Because, see, I have to sort of consider the real possibility that the Democrats are going to lose all three branches. Because I don't really see what Obama is going to do to help himself out. I don't know. I could be wrong.
Oh, you mean like the big job speech that's coming?
No, that's just that's not going to be anything, because he, along with his other people who are left in his administration, we've heard people admit they don't believe that a government job is a job. They believe that, too. And so, you're like, yikes. If you're hearing that kind of rhetoric from the so-called Democratic administration, then the hopes of a real sort of jump start for jobs, well,
Yeah, not so much.
Yeah, I think...
No, that was my point. This is not going to be some sort of tomorrow I'm signing legislation to create the WPA and the CCC speech.
Right. And, I also look at how he's handling any little pushback to the banks. I mean, he's doing his best to represent his main constituency, which seems to be the banks. I just read, which I think is interesting, that the FDIC is now objecting to this other $8.5 billion settlement that Bank of America is trying to shove down their investors, who are suing them. And this lawsuit would allow them to pay off the investors that have been scammed through Countrywide. You know Countrywide, right?
Right, right.
Okay, well, anyway, the FDIC has come down saying, oh, no, we're not down with this. So Bank of America is under assault from all sides. They just got a pick-me-up from Buffett, kind of like what he did for Goldman Sachs. He was just put in by $5 billion or some madness. But they just sold half of their holdings in their Chinese concern. So they're in big trouble. And
that's a piss poor political strategy if it is. I always took Senator Byrd's words to heart. He told me once, he said, there's only two ways to run a campaign, unopposed and scared stiff. And that's the truth. You've got to run like you acknowledge the point and the possibility that you will lose. And these polling numbers that came out last week, you know, one poll does not an election make, but Obama was leading Rick Perry by 2 points.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I mean, it's sort of, you know, you can either be sort of swayed by the Obama supporters and other people like Alter, Jonathan Alter, or that other freak at the, that I call Bob, Baghdad Bob.
Yeah.
For crime. You know, they're all trying to write as if, oh, Obama don't have a choice, it's the best he can do line, that bullshit. Which is fantasy world. Because it's like, you know, that's not what people are concerned about. They don't give a F about that. They are saying that they don't have jobs. Like every other election. So, they seem to think they're going to be able to run around that. And so, right for me, Bob, I can't understand where they're coming up with this calculus. How is it different from any other election ever in history when unemployment was really high? How is this going to be any different?
I don't know.
Okay, I'm just wondering. I'm asking you because I'm just...
No, I don't know because, what is it, 9 out of 13 don't end well.
Right, and you know, we're way above the 7%. That had Reagan
flying
like a madman. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and as far as what will they do, my understanding, my low opinion of American political perspicacity, if you will, says this, Sandra. And that is that as long, and this has certainly been the messaging, hasn't it? As long as they promise the people who are on the program now or will be in the next 5 years that they won't be touched, they can screw the rest of us all the way into the sheetrock.
Well, there is that, although, you know, I'm still, like I said, because it's a generational program, I'm still confused, but I'm also, you know, this is the other problem with Obama is that, well, once again, maybe if someone hideous got in like Perry, you would get the proper mobilization on the progressive side like they did against Bush.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, everybody will all be friends again if there's a Republican in the White House.
Well, no, if that's the case, that could be something that could stop the destruction of Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. Whereas if Obama is reelected, forgive me, he can just go ahead and finish the program off. Now, I hate to say that, but remember what I said to you before. It might be hell is what you wish for when this man ain't got no constraint.
You know what? Let me expand on that for just a minute, if I may. Is there anybody out there? And I'm not trying to be a jackass, but is there anybody out there that sees Joe Biden running for the presidency of the United States in 2016? Assuming that Barack Obama is reelected. Is there anybody that sees... Because I don't. So that means it's going to be a wide-open field in 2016, and this adds on to your argument that he has absolutely nothing to constrain him.
And also remember what he said years ago about entitlement reform is huge on his own platform.
Number one.
That bullshit.
Number one.
People out there shouldn't forget it, because as you're scrambling around making sure that one of these freaks don't get into power, watch out if he gets back in the office. And I know I've contradicted myself in this conversation because I am freaked out by the prospect of those Republicans being in control of everything. But I'm also freaked out in this Nixon goes to China shit that could be on
well,
the
Well, see, I was about to really annoy you with that because that's what scares me because let's just look at this from a historical perspective thing. What is the health care bill that got put through, the Affordable Care Act? What is that except for a very lightly tinkered with version of the same damned bill that Bob Dole offered to counter so-called Clinton care or Hillary care or whatever they were calling it in 1992. You remember that?
Yeah, and it's taken straight from the Heritage Foundation. See, that's another thing about
Yes. Yes.
You know, so when Obama was flirting and torturing or taunting us or teasing us with the public option, it was like, oh, whatever. This is just, you know, just for the hippies.
But I do remember, Sandra, that during the primary process, there were a number of people out there who were saying, listen, Hillary's health care plan is a lot closer to what we want than what his is.
Well, exactly. No, it's just kind of like, you know, the public option went away right away. And then we were presented with this heritage, third-way mesh of madness that we're getting. And, you know, I don't know what that's going to be.
And see, that if you look at Afghanistan, if you look at Guantanamo, if you look at, there's a number of places, and I don't want any of the diehard Obama supporters to say, he doesn't love him like he ought to. No, these are just facts, that there are a number of places within this presidency standard where Barack Obama has actually carried on and carried out the plans of the Bush administration.
Exactly. And, you know,
and so I remember very well January of 2005 when George W. Bush said, I just won nation political capital, and I'm going to spend it. And the first thing he said he was going to spend it on was, yeah, the privatization of Social Security.
And you saw the mobilization like you never did before, and that shit was stopped. Now, and we've already had a taste of how the left and the Democrats respond to Obama's actions, and that's what
Bush... Right, and that's what scares me. If Bush privatization of Social Security 2.0 beta comes out in, say, January 2013, well, I'm pretty secure in saying that there is an element within the Democratic Party. And there's a word for them, and I'm not going to use it because I respect their opinions, and I don't like them. But they're going to respond by calling us hippies for objecting to, well, look, maybe it'll work out to put young workers Social Security in the stock market.
Oh, yeah, no, and don't forget, I remember this too, you know, you throw away these little statements, and you think, but that whole statement where Obama was talking about entitlement, and he's had the nerve to mention the, you know, vaguely and kind of not straightforward, but he suggested that, well, maybe people like him don't need it. Bingo.
Right, so what's the harm in a little means testing?
Right, and that's the end of it. Everyone understands, not everyone, I'm saying in our little family here, when a means test a program in this country, that means it's for people who are poor, or who can't get anything else. Thus, the program is marginalized and easy to finish off.
Right, and what will begin as rational means testing will proceed through Republican machinations to become really mean means testing.
Right, and the whole idea of the genius of the program that Roosevelt and his people came up with was everyone in, nobody out. I'm quite happy for Warren Buffett to get his fucking Medicare and Social Security. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I want him to have it. I want him to have it.
I don't have a problem with it.
I want Rockefellers on Social Security.
And Rand. That bitch got it. Good for her.
Yeah.
Everybody in, nobody out.
See, maybe that's the fundamental disconnect that people like you and me and the rest of the Horn family have, Sandra, is that we look at these things in a way that other people don't. Or can't, or won't. And that, I mean, you know, food stamps? You know what? I want everybody to have food stamps. Medicare? I want everybody to have Medicare. Social Security? I want everybody to have Social Security. I mean, because, you know what? If you're raising two kids and you're making $45,000 a year in America, you ain't eating steak every night either.
Well, you know, and I know we've had this discussion before, but you know, the biggest barrier to the expanding of the social safety net, even when the marginal tax rate was 91%, is, like I said before, the, quote, diversity of the country, i.e., we don't want the niggas to get it, so it ain't going to happen. If you don't have that problem in all the other
Andy just wrote in from Redwood City, Sandra, and he said, tell Sandra, President Obama calls Social Security and Medicare an entitlement. It doesn't matter what we or you or us call it. So the term is now well-respected in the corporate media, among corporatists, and the Blue Dogs, DLC, Friends of the Chicago School. If these two programs, Andy says, are entitlements, then by definition, all private insurance companies are running entitlement programs. You pay a premium, have a contract, and expect that contract to be honored when you submit a claim or the policy matures. But hell, says Andy, Mr. Obama has put these programs on the chopping block and facilitates the Republican Karl Rove talking points with his use of the word entitlement.
Well, the problem is that people don't understand. I mean, when I hear entitlement, I can understand that it sounds like, well, yeah, I paid into it, so I'm entitled to it. That's the connection I make.
Right.
But we know what they're turning it into. That's why I refuse. I have to use insurance. Because if I say entitlement to people I'm talking to, they take the Karl Rove definition. Because that's what's been
welfare.
Pounded into the heads of people. You know, they don't. They don't, when they hear entitlement, they don't make connection that, listen, you dumbass, you're paid into it, so you're entitled to it. They can't seem to, you know, I don't know if it's bad education, I don't know what it is, Bob. You know me, I'm the last little snob. You know it's true. No, it's like, you know, what the fuck, make some connections here. Critical thinking, now, please. So, in the meanwhile, we have Obama talking about entitlement, and you and I are like, God damn. Because you know what it means, just like Andy just explained very clearly.
Yeah, and I get what Juanita meant in her call, too, when she says that, you know, the last human being that she knows of in the Senate is Bernie Sanders.
Yeah.
Now, here's a guy who is going to offer, if he hasn't already, legislation that just, you know, eliminates that stupid $106,000 cap.
Yeah, that would solve the problem, you know, for the next 7 generations, if I may add.
If not 10, 12, 15,
oh,
what have you? It might be forever.
Yeah, no, because, it, you know, we're talking, and yes, that would be a 12% or 6% tax on all them motherfuckers. So that's one way of taxing them.
And what have they got to complain about if we do that?
Oh, no, it's so gross that this is not an issue. But, you know, more importantly...
go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, more importantly is the idea that the fucking capital gains tax, you know, the fact that they can't even raise that 5 or 7% is shocking. Do you understand? Because these people earn all their income from capital gains, and that bitch is only 15%. It's absolutely criminal and damn near immoral that people aren't up in arms about that. You got all these assholes who don't do nothing. I mean, I want to grow up to sell derivatives. Fuck. Okay?
Hey, maybe you can sell Texas dead teacher life insurance derivatives. I mean,
but the whole argument that somehow capital gain is superior to your wages is absurd in this environment now. You don't even make no sense. They can pay.
But remember that they go on the offensive by saying that it's too much. They want the capital gains tax eliminated.
Well, they want to eliminate it, but I mean, it needs to, no, it's a source of revenue that needs to be a tax. It has to be increased. It's incredible. I mean, it's just the whole sort of arsenal that the rich have that can be exposed to taxation is damn near endless.
Yeah, well, I mean, and we've talked about this before. There has been in this country, Sandra, why is there not now a penny transaction tax on everything that takes place on Wall Street?
Well, that's the thing. Yes. I mean, Tobin. Tobin tax. I mean, it's a name for it. There's a theory out there. There's an economist who developed it. I mean, the thing is that Europe is embarking on, they're talking about some sort of Tobin tax.
Well, it's certainly not going to, a penny is, you know what, if investors leave the market over a penny.
Gone.
Gone. Exactly.
Yeah, but it needs to be disciplined because I'll go back to this one quadruple fucking derivative thing that's floating around. I mean, if you had some sort of transaction tax, you know, it'd be a lot less appealing to be doing these bets upon bets upon bets upon bets like we have, you know? The state is obligated to attack what is essentially a foreign occupier. That's what
if we raise the capital gains tax to 25%. Raise it to 30. I don't care. A penny transaction tax on every trade. Because you know what? The trading houses themselves have their own form of taxation. It's called a fee.
Exactly. No, listen. The percentage on their transaction plus making the capital gains 27% to 30% or whatever, or 25%. Listen, them bitches will still be rich.
Yeah, it's not like they're not going to be able to afford lunch.
No, and it's just incredible. And the thing that's really disturbing to me is that, there's this whole idea of state capacity, and then there's Weber's definition of the state being having a monopoly to do violence. Well, the state is also the entity that can tax. But somehow, that mechanism is out the window, where the people who are so-called representing us spend all their time protecting the wealth of the rich.
Right, and see, some of that I think is you hear these little things that are out there. There's that one passage in McCulloch versus Maryland.
Yeah.
Where the Supreme Court remarks that the power to tax is the power to destroy.
Yeah.
And if I had my little Mr. Peabody time machine, I'd go back and make sure that that doesn't go into that opinion. Because it's one of those things that little right-wingers hang on to with their nasty little claws sunk in all the way up to the quick.
No, but the thing is that they have no problem policing the citizenry. You see what I'm saying? The state is quite adept at doing that. And it used to be quite adept at taxing the rich. I mean, those marginal tax rates, that's not fantasy. That was real. And, it's hideous because the U.S., with their Bretton Woods regime, introduced all this shit to the world, and now it's really coming back to screw us over so badly. It's stunning. I don't know.
The other place, and you and I are both in this same boat, I didn't like it when they did it to me. And when they did it to me, I was a much younger man. I'm still pissed off that I got to work my ass off to 67 to ever draw the first damn dime of Social Security. I want that shit gone backwards.
Yeah, no, and it should, and the way we have this kind of permanent high unemployment, the policymakers and the people who are designing these policies should be doing exactly that. They should roll back the ages so more people can basically get out of the labor market because other people can get the jobs. I mean, these solutions aren't that difficult. And the fact that we don't have a government that's responsive to us is a huge problem, which I don't know if the ballot box is going to take care of. I mean, I've been laughing at old Mike Malloy. He is gone, man. He's out there.
I've been reading Brad Friedman long enough to think that I got no real faith in the ballot box anymore as long as we're voting on video games.
Yeah. No, I'm not disagreeing with it. It's just kind of, I don't know. I mean, like I saw at the top of this call, which I'm still sort of confused about, where the right is going to go with these entitlements, I'm saying it, these insurance programs.
Well, I mean, I'm comfortable saying that they won't do an outright kill because they can't get away with it. But to see them see what happens to me. I go back to things, for instance, Cassie. She's a sophomore at Princeton now, and she said retirement, Bob. My generation can't even imagine being 40, let alone retired.
Right, so you're saying that whole generation is not even going to be paying attention to these sort of drastic changes that they'll be able to do.
Or they will pay attention enough to hear the right wing say, we're going to let you keep your money. Because remember, that's how the last raft of tax cuts got boondoggled in.
Yeah, but that was before you had a total collapse of the economic, the financial system. I mean, trust me, I understand that the propaganda is real thick, but I do think a lot more people are much more skeptical of the financial system now than they were in 2005. They gotta be.
But by the same...
So for someone to suggest we're gonna... all the programs a 401, they might get laughed in the face with that one. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. You know, maybe you're right about that. I guess.
Or some sort of hybrid, Sandra. We're not going to completely do away with it, but we're gonna cut the rate, and we will not tax you if you put that much into your own 401k or whatever. Cut it by 2.2%. And the next election cycle, the Republicans will say, well, I want you to be able to keep more of your money. We'll make it 3%.
Yeah.
And so without ever telling anybody that they're killing Social Security, and by telling the younger generation of working people, well, you know, you can go spend it on the lottery, or you can go to Vegas, or hell, you know what, you could put it into a medical savings account, or a Roth IRA, or any of that silly horse shit. Well, what they're effectively doing, well, it's like the conversation you and I had when they struck the deal that cut the payroll tax by 2 percentage points. And you said, when is that ever going to get put back on?
Actually, it's going to get put back because all of a sudden Republicans have decided there's a tax cut they don't want. They know about this.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Yeah, which is, I think it's really interesting. It's like, oh, wait, now you don't want a tax cut to remain?
And if they do that, then the rate goes back up, and that gives them more room in a couple of years to say, we're going to cut by 2.5%, and you're going to take that money and invest it in the market.
Yeah, on some madness. I mean, I understand. But at the base of this is the total lack of leadership on the Democratic side, unless they're just two peas pod, you know what I mean, which is... What I'm beginning to think is the case. It's kind of good cop, bad cop, Democrat or Republican, right?
Yeah, well, no, it's not the first time it's run across my mind because, like I said, I've said before, you know, maybe we're the wolves for saying, well, why can't he be the kind of president we want him to be? Maybe he's being the kind of president he wants to be.
No, well, I'm back. I mean, I'm over that. That was out the window. I don't, you know, I think that, yeah, no, that's why I said, you know, he might be ex-really effective president, not the weak one. But anyway, just a quick thought. Did you see that, I forget the guy who wrote that article, he used to be the coach of LSU. He wrote the New York Times about there should be a farm league for the NFL, like baseball.
I didn't see it, but I'm not surprised to hear it.
Because it's like, I guess the whole idea of it would take care of all the infractions in the college because some people, you know, don't want to go to college. They just want to, you know, play football, but they're not physically ready. So why not set up this farm system where you can be paid to get ready to play in the NFL? I mean, I don't know. My first thought was like you, but maybe you have any opinion about that?
Well, first of all, I think you're going to have a hard time wresting this multi-billion-dollar industry away from the colleges.
Pat, and also, I thought I was to ask you, how would they fund such a farm thing? You know, where would the funding come from? The NFL?
Yeah, I mean, if it's truly a farm system, because that's the way it works in baseball.
So the NFL will pay these young people to get their bodies right to go into the NFL.
Yeah, and they would, I suppose it would be structured in such a way as, you know, I don't know, maybe they play on Wednesdays. When does it, I mean, like a farm club.
Yeah.
You know, say a triple A baseball team loses money. But it puts, you know, it's a pretty good brand of baseball, and they put fans in the stands, and they, you know, they sell concessions and everything, and they might come close to a break even. And if they don't, the ownership packs up and moves on to somewhere else that will.
Right. I mean, because there's been a lot of sort of...
But there is a significant subsidy that flows downhill from the mother organization.
Yeah, so that would be a direct competition. competition with the multi-billions that these universities get, though, right?
Yeah, because, I mean, if some kid who, the real hot shots are not going to go to college, and, one of the things, and it had to be dealt with a couple of years ago, you know, where the NFL and the NCAA came to an agreement that, you know what, you cannot go and play NFL football until you've got 2 years under your belt in college.
No, I thought it was three.
Issue, as we've discussed it in the past, is that the odds, you know, let's say you stay for that senior year out of loyalty to alma mater, right? I mean, you really care. You're trying to get an education. And on the third game of the season, you blow a knee.
Right.
Or something even more awful happens. Well, you know what? Nothing nice happens to you from the college's standpoint. From that point on, because
exactly. You
know they've got roster requirements they've got to meet. You know, this ain't Woody Hayes football where you can have a home squad of 197.
Yeah, no, you're ass out. They're done with you, and you're gone, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I just I don't know. I just thought it was sort of it's interesting, and I guess all this is bubbling up because there's been just sort of nonstop scandals, right?
Well, I think they're finally coming to grips with the fact that, these scandals you're always going to, and this Miami scandal is so damn tawdry.
It's over the top. Come on now. I was just like, what?
No, really? You paid for the stripper's abortion? Really?
Yeah, no, it's just...
And then the pathetic quality of Miami saying, well, we don't know who this guy is. And, oh, yeah, you do. And they show the footage of the guy carrying the Miami flag out of the tunnel with the Pelican, with the smoke and the fog and the guy... No, you know who you are. Yeah.
Right. No. And it's just... It is so... so much so that you have to hear Luther Campbell going on. I'm like, Luther Campbell? Shit. Anyway, no. I don't know. The Miami thing is hella entertaining. Listen, they probably can't wait for the people to get on the football field. This has just been a disaster. The NFL.
At this point, Miami could go 0-12. Please, just play, as long as they're being allowed to play football, because I don't know if you heard, but at first it was being said, we'll never use the death penalty again, because when we shut down SMU, we screwed the entire Southwest Conference, that hurt players who were innocent, blah, 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 blah. And the honchos at the NCAA said, oh, no, the death penalty's still on the table.
Oh.
And, if not this, who, what? And then you take into account that you want to know who's not needing any laxatives lately? Nick Saban at Alabama. Because he's got two of those crooked bastards from Miami on his staff.
Okay, you know what time it is. That's what I'm saying. All those programs, such as the high achiever ones, they all hella suspect. And Fuzzy down in Carolina, he was the one talking about paying folks, wasn't he? But they all know.
Yeah.
They all know the writing's on the wall. But I just wonder how it's going to resolve itself, because, come season time, everybody forgets. So they just want to watch the football. So I know
and you know what? I'm that guy.
Exactly.
I want to see Dana Holgers. Because it was all small. It was small potatoes comparatively. But my beloved Mountaineers went through the ringer. And that friend of Jesus who turned out to be doing some sort of cloak and dagger Stalin-esque sleaze program. I mean, the guy gets on the phone to a sports writer at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette and says, dig up some dirt on this Holgerson guy for me, would you? And this, you know, this is the guy who, well, it doesn't matter whether we win or lose. They're fine Christian young men we're turning out here in Morgantown. Oh, that shit must have turned to ashes in his mouth. So I just want to see him play some damn ball. And LSU is coming to Morgantown. And, you know, I don't know. I'll put a limb on eBay for a pair of good tickets to that.
Yeah, well, don't, you know, hide your cost there. Okay, listen, I'll let you go. Oh, I'll send this to you. It's this amazing animation of the star being eaten by a black hole that they said they saw.
Ooh, awesome.
Yeah, I'll send it to you now. Okay.
I love that stuff. See you, Sandra.
Bye.
Bye now. This is Conversation Radio, just in case you were wondering. And let's see who is where. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Cossack, what's happening, man?
Not much. It's always good to hear from Sandra.
Yeah, I think she's ready for some ball.
I think so.
And you know what? I'm ready. It has been a long, hot summer, and I'm ready to just be completely mindlessly diverted. I admit it. I'm shallow. I want one day a week where I can just go bam and recharge, you know?
Yeah. You know, I enjoy college ball, but I'm just waiting for my beloved Redskins to take the field and see what they can do.
You got any hope?
Actually, I do. This Beck kid seems to be the real deal, maybe. I hope.
Well, you know, it is wait and see. I mean, I guess, what, Donovan wanted to go to Minnesota, didn't he?
Yeah. And as Sam Huff always says, you know, live in hope, die in despair. You remember Sam Huff, don't you?
Oh, yeah, and so does Jim Brown.
Oh, yeah. Hard-headed West Virginian.
Now, he's the one who told the story of every home and every coal camp in West Virginia had three photographs on the wall. Jesus Christ, John L. Lewis, and John F. Kennedy. Because that was the kind of home he grew up in.
Yeah. Oh, God. That's the post office. Isn't that in the
Constitution? Yeah, it kind of is.
Yeah.
But being in the Constitution has never slowed down a teabagger now, has it?
And
so's the general welfare.
And wasn't Ben Franklin one of the people, the person that said, you know, that was one of the main emphases for ditching the Confederacy and writing up the Constitution in the first place?
As was noted in the Prism series, there were a lot of reasons. One of them was democracy was getting out of hand.
Well, yeah. But considering Ben Franklin was first postmaster.
You know, by the time the teabaggers would get done with him, he'd probably be a communist.
God. Well, considering that, you heard about the Texas history curriculum, right?
There's a new one?
Yeah. They mention Estee Lauder, but they don't mention Washington.
Oh, no. Please, that's got to be a joke.
No, that's dead serious. Estee Lauder and Phyllis Schlafly are mentioned, but Washington is.
But I thought they just got done with their standards, Cossack.
No, this is a new one.
Because the other ones weren't weird enough?
Correct. obscurity. What are you going to do with old farts like me?
Depends on how old an old fart like you is.
59?
Yeah, see, I don't, honestly, like I said with Sandra, I think they'll establish a window that goes to maybe 56, and nobody gets touched above it, and then it's a free market wonderland for everybody below it, and they're counting on the fact that they are dividing the forces to be significant enough to let them get the job done. But bear in mind, it's not going to be one fell swoop stuff. I don't think I've ever said that. This is going to be negative incrementalism at its absolute worst or finest, depending on how you view the process.
So, and speaking of Eric Cantor, you heard that no emergency funds for...
No, not without concomitant spending cuts.
Correct.
Really, really, Cossack? At this point, what is left to say about the people in this district?
Considering some of them were hit by Irene, I don't know.
And all of whom who felt the earthquake?
Exactly.
I mean, if I was a religious man, I'd be taking that very seriously. I wouldn't be in a humorous vein like Michelle Bachmann. But, no, I mean, this jackass is going to be up for re-election in November 2012. One, does the all-too-timid Democratic Party have a viable challenger for him? B, why aren't they already, maybe they are already, running ads about this in his district? And C, is it maybe time, Cossack, that this kind of advertising actually target the voters?
Yeah.
And by target the voters, I mean, and that sounds awful, I probably should pick a different word, focus on the voters by saying, you sent this guy to Congress. This is what he's done. Are you going to do it again? If so, and there would probably have to be some focus group work with this, how damn dumb are you?
Yeah. Are you going to let him do it to you again? You've been bent over and had. Are you going to let it happen again?
Right.
I mean, jeez.
At what point? I mean, you're responsible for this. The rest of the... I don't know. Maybe that's what the script would say. The rest of the people of the United States are looking to the District of Virginia, understanding that you are the people responsible for sending that to the Congress of the United States. I guess that's just too confrontational, isn't it?
Oh, I don't know. It needs to be.
Well, yeah, that's my point. I mean, we're getting perilously close to, run the same kind of ad in Minnesota. You have sicked that loopy, crazy, religiously hallucinated thing on us. What are we supposed to think of you? What happened to Minnesota Nice? How nice is that to do to the people, your fellow Americans?
Oh, by the way, it's the 7th District.
Of Virginia?
Yeah.
Jesus. I mean, I don't think that's a crazy question to ask anymore.
No. I mean, yeah, the rest of the country is looking at Virginia and laughing because it's better to laugh than cry, but...
Right.
It's kind of ridiculous.
Well, I'm
for more of the haircuts. And I keep on trying to say, don't you understand you're asking for them to cut your own pension? He doesn't. It doesn't penetrate. That's how stupid these people are. This literally does not penetrate their thick skulls. And this is like the jackass drill, where the guy's literally sitting on limb and sawing it off at the base. And he's sitting on it. Are that stupid.
I hate to admit it, but you're right. What?
You would imagine people would have enough common sense not to do something of this nature. Yeah, they do. And they do it with...
And recognizing... And we all took care of each other, and that FEMA is a drag on the budget. But he specifically said 1900, Juanita, and that's very important in this discussion.
I heard him, yeah.
Now, in 1900, the worst hurricane ever to hit the United States came ashore at Galveston.
Yeah.
It killed between 6,000 and 12,000 human beings.
Yeah.
We still don't know for sure how many. And that is what Ron Paul wants to go back to? You know, I've got an email from one of those weird right-wing emails asking me to interview somebody who is pushing the idea that Democrats should switch over and be Republicans in the primary and go and vote for Ron Paul. I mean, could you get a Democrat? I don't know. Maybe you could. Could you get a Democrat to go vote for somebody that likes it when 6,000 to 12,000 people die in a hurricane? I mean, that just makes my eyeballs roll back in my head and go, because... You know,
well, we'll see how many more Republicans come out repeating what he said. I'm sorry I'm stuttering, but, you know, Rubio?
Yeah.
From Florida?
Yeah, Mark Rubio, the teabagger.
Did you hear his little speech about Social Security?
Oh, no.
Well, he said that it was to discourage people, and we needed to go back to where, you know, people helped one another out. Well, I can remember where people helped one another out, but they couldn't afford to pay all their bills and give them a standard amount of money. You know what I'm saying?
I sure do.
But they got that kind of it. And when he was running for election, he was talking about how, you know, his folks came from Cuba and how Social Security really help them out, the, you know, the parents and all, you know.
But we've just outgrown it now? Is that what it is?
I don't know, but see, you know. And they're going to really come out with trying to say that when we passed Obamacare, you know what they call it, that they took out millions or billions from the program, and they're going to try to make people believe that. And you know how they do. They just keep repeating it.
You know how I don't know if you've noticed this or not. You want to know how stupid some American people are, Juanita? The United States Postal Workers Union is having to run ads right now just telling people, and for the most part, you've got to figure it's teabaggers they're talking to. Hey, your taxes don't pay to run the Postal Service, okay?
Yeah.
Because apparently teabaggers don't like the post office. For heaven's sakes. I mean, doesn't that just make you want to... The post office,
yeah,
really?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it's amazing. And...
I mean, because these clowns and these teabaggers and whatever, I guess they've never actually priced what it costs to send a letter via Federal Express or UPS or any of those other companies.
Oh, yeah, no, or anything.
You know what? I had to do that one time, and I did it, and I was out like $20.
Yeah.
And I vowed that day that I would never complain about the price of United States Postal Service postage again so long as I live, and I haven't.
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
really...
Even what it is now, you know.
Yeah, but that's the point. Even if it's 60 cents a stamp, that's still something like, what, $9.40 less than what it would cost to send it?
Yeah.
3 days
that's
with UPS?
Enough. Way over, yeah. I didn't know that was what I wanted to tell you the other day about Rubio. And, you know, he's Jeb's bad boy or whatever you want to call
anointed
him.
One or...
Yeah, but old Jeb, you know... He'll get his finger in the pie. If they ever make him vice president, well, to whoever's president.
Yeah, stay off small aircraft.
He might go hang himself.
Oh, don't joke.
I shouldn't, because... Sometimes I say something and joke, and then it'll come true. I guess that's superstition, right?
Sometimes it's observation of known phenomena.
But the hurricane, one thing I wanted to say about that, and this is bad of me to say this, but I think a lot of people might think of it. You know how many people called in and said, well, those people in New Orleans should have left. They should have gone to some place, safe place. I wonder how many people who got into this hurricane deal might not have prepared or couldn't prepare. You know, it costs money. I heard somebody on TV talking about how much money it might cost you to go somewhere else. And did you see those senior citizens? I think they were in New Jersey, and they were going to ride it out because the alternative. Did you see that?
I did.
And the alternative was, they didn't know where they would go, what would be there. And I know too many times where you go and it's kind of like a mini dome, you know, like it was in New Orleans. Like mini domes, you know what I'm saying?
Yes,
you
I do.
Get a bunch of people packed in a place, and how many people have decent toilet habits, you know? And how many of the
in circumstances like that, the real
bunch of people.
The real test of people is in circumstances like that. For instance, during the Fukushima disaster, which continues to unfold in Japan, Japanese social structure held up because of the way it is, as it was explained to us by, among others, Robert there in Japan.
Yeah.
Social structures held up because of the depth and focus of them. The United States, no. Things fall apart real fast because we are a self-centered nation. Me, 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 right?
Yeah. But there's a lot of reasons why sometimes you can't go. Now, I know out where I live, it's a heavy crime area, but of course the whole country is. I have people say, why did you move from there? Well, I'm used to this place. This is my home, you know.
Right. It's the difference between the devil. It's the difference between the devil you know and the devil you don't.
And you could go to these gated communities, and there's plenty of crime going on there. Not just among the residents, but people that go in and out. You always have somebody going in and out of those places.
Certainly. Certainly, without a doubt.
And anyway, a lot of times, you know, and I know that it's bad when you get the water gums up over to your eyeballs, you know, which that happens sometime and has happened. I want to tell you something before I forget, and then I'll shut up.
Oh.
I found out Yahoo, I caught them in a lie, on their front page, reporting on the hurricane.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was watching, I stayed up and watched that till it started repeating a bunch of stuff. But anyway, they were talking about, they had, like it was news, that the hurricane had hit New York City, and they had high winds and flooding and all. Well, that was about 3 hours before it did hit New York City. And it did. They
oh,
didn't
they had it. Yeah, they had it pre-written.
They didn't have the winds. Huh? Yeah. And they didn't have the winds. They had the flooding. Though they didn't have the high winds like they reported. And they reported before it even went there.
Right. You know, just getting things out of the way, making you right.
So, whatever you read on Yahoo News, sometimes it ain't correct.
Or they get a little ahead of themselves.
Yeah, well, that was a little bit ahead of themselves. But.
Or perhaps a lot ahead of themselves.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I one more thing I wanted to ask you. I am thinking about this because I was asked a question on a survey, what would I do to cut down government spending? And, you know, I was come to the conclusion, what do we need the Congress for?
Now, see, the first place I go is the Pentagon.
Well, that's a good... That's a
what nice. Do we need a military that costs that costs as much as... Well, no, that costs as much as the number 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10 militaries combined.
Oh, yeah. Well, my reasoning on the Congress is that most of them, if they're Republicans, they want to take away everything they can from us. If they're Democrats, they don't want nothing to change, and so they'll go along with the Republicans because they don't want to fight. We have a few, very few, and I can't even think of them now except the Black Caucus. I'm in the Black Caucus, and not all of them. And the Senate, enough said, Bernie Sanders.
That's about it.
And that's about it. Well, I'm going to let you go, Bob.
All right. Well,
and you're not going to be there. You're not going to be on air tomorrow night?
No, tomorrow, Wednesday, and Thursday, I'm not there.
Okay. And I do want to say to Tracy that I like Maxine Waters, too. And if she goes to Washington and meets her, tell her that there's one Southern gal that appreciates those people in the Black Caucus that do stand up for we the people.
Well, I have, you know what, I feel the same way. There's very few people in the Congress I feel like actually represent our interests. And I got no problems with Maxine Waters. And I got, I consider her in the same light that I consider Dennis Kucinich, formerly Alan Grayson when he was in there.
Yeah.
There is a small handful of others as well.
Yeah. And they say what they want to about us, but even the Blue Dogs, they just think Alan Grayson's terrible.
Yeah, he's mean.
And also tell her that also Cornel West is one of my heroes.
Okay. Well, maybe she may be listening, although it's my understanding she's also in, she's in San Francisco this week. I saw a tweet a few minutes ago that she's in San Francisco, Tracy is. I saw her tweeting a few minutes ago that she was in some sourdough bakery or something, and I immediately felt terribly, terribly jealous.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. You have a good night, Juanita.
Okay. Good night.
We'll talk soon. Bye now.
All right. Bye-bye.
Juanita calling from Central Florida. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey, listen. That speech that Bachman did was recent, right? Because she did say she's also running for president.
Yeah. I mean,
how the hell? I mean, okay, is this an exercise in, speaking to her so-called base, and then she plans on distancing herself from this? I mean, because it's an outrage that some candidate for political office in this country is up there talking about, Jesus and God, and I mean, it's too much. I couldn't even believe I was hearing that. It was way, way too much.
You know what? That's even way out there past George W. Bush, isn't it?
Well, yeah, no, it's just, it's ridiculous. I mean, she's, I'm speechless because between her and that other freak, the more I see of this Perry person, the more I'm like, are you kidding me with this? And again, no wonder Texas is in the state that it's in. Good Jesus. They've had a decade of this freak.
And remember, before that, they had a decade of W.
Yeah, no, but the thing is with the Perry, I mean, just the outright lies that are never challenged. I mean, this man is talking about Social Security is some sort of cruel Ponzi scheme or it's unconstitutional and blah, blah, blah. And it's just kind of like these people never address, what do you expect to replace it with? Because you sure in the hell aren't going to allow all the millions of people, a third of them who are not old, to not have access to this insurance program. You may disagree with me, but even if the Republicans come into power, they are not going to get rid of those programs. Mark my word. Now, they may cut every program for the poor, because doing anything for the poor is okay. That's fine.
Yeah.
But they're not going to destroy. I don't believe it. I don't know what game they're running, but there's too many Republicans who get the program. You see, who get these programs. That's the thing that I'm constantly looking at now. It's just like, no, you know, I don't know who they're talking to, because anyone who pays any attention to the budget of the U.S. government knows that the vast majority of it are these insurance programs and the military. That's it. The rest of it is so small that, you know what I'm saying? So I'm starting to get really confused, because I don't care if Obama loses and these other people all come in. There's no way. Because what are they going to do with the millions of people who are going to lose that transfer payment? I'm just talking to you. I'm not talking to you as a partisan or nothing. I'm talking to
No.
How is the country going to function when the reality of what the U.S. government is what I just described?
My only, and I'm going to respond to you, Sandra, not as a partisan. My only response is that I think you are predicating your query on what may turn out to be, I would like to be wrong about this, but you may be starting from a false premise. And I maintain that you kind of are, because I don't think that these people actually want a government. I don't think Rick Perry was kidding when he was talking secession.
Well, okay, no, I understand, but what I'm saying is that when they come up against what they're actually talking about doing, you know, the actual mechanics and, you know, taking apart these three safety net programs, or these three insurance programs, Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. I'm not saying I'm going to wait around to see how they pull it off, but I'm a bit skeptical now because of how these programs came into being, how long they've been in place, how the money is generated, i.e. this tax that all workers have to pay. You know, I don't know. And I'm not saying it's like their abortion argument, the same thing where they would never want to ban abortion because it's too good to them in the electoral process. You know what I mean?
Right.
Likewise, I can't, you know, because there's too many white people who depend. I'm sorry, I'm going there. Too many white people who depend on these programs. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
So, I'm quite happy to hear your explanation, you know, but I'm just really starting to be a little bit curious about how their dogma is going to translate into
these programs. This could be one of those situations, Sandra, where they're finding out how difficult it is to serve two masters.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
What I mean by that is I read an article over the weekend, I think it was over at Truthout, that said it was something like the history of hating Social Security or something like that. And it was really quite an educational experience because it, among other things, it put the assaults on Medicare and Social Security and Medicaid in perspective over time. And it showed the genesis of these think tanks making arguments about eliminating it.
Yeah.
And so when you consider the amount of money that flows through those things and the amount of clout that they now have via whether it be 527s or, you know, just outright Citizens United money.
Yeah.
They say they want an end to it, so these people who are beholden to them have to give lip service to that.
Okay. I understand, but there's also, if you look at the marketplace for these programs, I mean, how many millions of people, I mean, businesses and whatnot, are sustained by these programs? You understand what I'm saying? It's like they say one thing about what government ain't, but we know what it is, and they goddamn it know what it is, too. This is what I mean about the disingenuousness of it. Give me a goddamn break.
Oh, no more scooter chair ads on cable TV, because those companies go away.
No more
Wilfred Brimley hustling diabetic supplies.
And nursing homes. Hello, they're all privatized. I'm sure they have an interest group to bark for them. You see what I'm saying? I just think that Now, don't get me wrong. I think every program, including Pell Grants, any sort of program to help poor people could be just wiped away if these people get into power. Now, I'm quite happy to assume that that is the goal, because poor people, the next stop is jail. You understand what I'm saying?
Well, that or the dirt.
Yeah, death or jail. They don't give a F about poor people. And I think that is the case. But these, you know, what's left of the middle class and these old people and people's parents and, you know, maybe people who are disabled, who depend on these insurance programs, and I refuse to call them anything else now but insurance programs.
No, they're damn sure not entitlement programs.
It's just a joke, you know, because there is a dedicated stream in case they seem to forget that. Once again, people like Rick Perry is like, bitch, what you talking about? People pay into this shit on the hour, every hour. What are you talking about? It's a Ponzi scheme. You see what I mean? I'm just sort of... And I don't mean to sound...
Well, among other things, it displays the fact that Rick Perry doesn't have the first damn clue what a Ponzi scheme is.
Oh, God. Well, anyway, I don't know. I just am sort of, you know, I'm just trying to look at the landscape. Because, see, I have to sort of consider the real possibility that the Democrats are going to lose all three branches. Because I don't really see what Obama is going to do to help himself out. I don't know. I could be wrong.
Oh, you mean like the big job speech that's coming?
Well, that's just that's not going to be anything, because he, along with his other people who are left in his administration, we've heard people admit they don't believe that a government job is a job. They believe that too. And so, you know, you're like, yikes. If you're hearing that kind of rhetoric from the so-called Democratic administration, then the hopes of a real sort of jump start for jobs, well, you know.
Yeah, not so much.
Yeah, I think.
No, that was my point. This is not going to be some sort of tomorrow I'm signing legislation to create the WPA and the CCC speech.
Right. And, you know, and I also look at how he's handling any little pushback to the banks. I mean, he's doing his best to represent his main constituency, which seems to be the bank. But I just read, which I think is interesting, that the FDIC is now objecting to this other $8.5 billion settlement that Bank of America is trying to shove down their investors, you know, who are suing them. And this lawsuit would allow them to pay off the investors that have been scammed through Countrywide. You know Countrywide, right?
Right, right.
Okay, well, anyway, the FDIC has come down saying, oh, no, we're not down with this. So Bank of America is under assault from all sides. They just got a pick-me-up from Buffett, kind of like what he did for Goldman Sachs. You know, he's just put in, like, $5 billion or some madness. But they just sold half of their holdings in their Chinese concern. So they're in big trouble, and we're in trouble, because that's one of those too big to fail things, right?
Right.
So anyway, I just don't know what Obama is going to be running on. We have a ways to go. I'm confused and, you know, concerned about, well, really, what's the deal? Do you think people will be so freaked out by Rick Perry if he's the candidate that they'll just be like, oh no, and run back to Obama in droves? Is that what we're hoping for?
That's a piss poor political strategy if it is. I always took Senator Byrd's words to heart. He told me once, he said, there's only two ways to run a campaign, unopposed and scared stiff. And that's the truth. You gotta run like you acknowledge the possibility that you will lose. And these polling numbers that came out last week, you know, one poll does not an election make, but Obama was leading Rick Perry by 2 points?
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. I mean, it's sort of, you know, you can either be sort of swayed by the Obama supporters and other people like Jonathan Alter, or that other freak that I call Bob Baghdad Bob.
Yeah.
Ezra Klein. You know, they're all trying to write as if, oh, well, Obama don't have a choice. This is the best he can do line. That bullshit, which is fantasy world, because it's like, well, no, that's not what people are concerned about. They don't give a F about that. they are saying that they don't have jobs, like every other election. So they seem to think they're going to be able to run around that. And for the life of me, Bob, I can't understand where they're coming up with this calculus. How is it different from any other election ever in history when unemployment was really high? How is this going to be any different?
I don't know.
Okay, I'm just wondering. I'm asking you because I'm just...
No, I don't know because, what is it, 9 out of 13 don't end well.
Right, and you know, we're way above the 7% that had Reagan scream like a madman. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and as far as what will they do, my understanding, or well, not understanding, my low opinion of American political perspicacity, if you will, says this, Sandra. And that is that as long, and this has certainly been the messaging, hasn't it? As long as they promise the people who are on the program now or will be in the next 5 years that they won't be touched, they can screw the rest of us all the way into the sheetrock.
Well, there is that. Although, you know, I'm still, like I said, because it's a generational program, I'm still confused. But I'm also, you know, this is the other problem with Obama is that, well, once again, maybe if someone hideous got in like Perry, you would get the proper mobilization on the progressive side like they did against Bush.
Oh, yeah. Everybody will all be friends again if there's a Republican in the White House.
Well, if that's the case, that could be something that could stop the destruction of Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. Whereas if Obama is reelected, forgive me, he could just go ahead and finish the programs off. Now, I hate to say that, but remember what I said to you before. You know, it might be hellish what you wish for when this man ain't got no constraints.
You know what? Let me expand on that for just a minute, if I may. Is there anybody out there? I'm not trying to be a jackass, but is there anybody out there that sees Joe Biden running for the presidency of the United States in 2016, assuming that Barack Obama is reelected? Is there anybody that sees? Because I don't. So that means it's going to be a wide-open field in 2016, and this adds on to your argument that he has absolutely nothing to constrain him.
And also remember what he said years ago about entitlement reform is huge on his own priority.
Number one. Number one.
Forget that bullshit.
Number one.
People out there shouldn't forget it because, you know, as you're scrambling around making sure that one of these freaks don't get into power, watch out if he gets back in office. And I know I've contradicted myself in this conversation because I am freaked out by the prospect of those Republicans being in control of everything. But I'm also freaked out in this Nixon goes to China shit that could be on
the
horizon.
Well, see, I was about to really annoy you with that because that's what scares me because let's just look at this from a historical perspective thing. What is the health care bill that got put through, the Affordable Care Act? What is that except for a very lightly tinkered with version of the same damned bill that Bob Dole offered to counter so-called Clinton Care or Hillary Care or whatever they were calling it in 1992. You remember that?
Yeah, and it's taken straight from the Heritage Foundation, too. That's another thing about...
Yes.
You know, so when Obama was flirting and torturing or taunting us or teasing us with the public option, it was like, oh, whatever. This is just, you know, just for the hippies.
But I do remember, Sandra, that during the primary process, there were a number of people out there who were saying, listen, Hillary's health care plan is a lot closer to what we want than what his is.
Well, exactly. No, and it's just kind of like, you know, the public option went away right away. And then we were presented with this heritage third way mesh of madness that we're getting. And, you know, I don't know what that's going to be.
If you look at Afghanistan, if you look at Guantanamo, if you look, there's a number of places, and I don't want any of the diehard Obama supporters to say, see, he doesn't love him like he ought to. No, these are just facts that there are a number of places within this presidency, Sandra, where Barack Obama has actually carried on and carried out the plans of the Bush administration.
Exactly. And, you know,
and so I remember very well January of 2005 when George W. Bush said, I just won me some political capital, and I'm going to spend it. And the first thing he said he was going to spend it on was, yeah, the privatization of Social Security.
And you saw the mobilization like you never did before, and that shit was stopped. Now, we've already had a taste of how the left and the Democrats respond to Obama's actions, and that's not really...
Right, and that's what scares me. If Bush privatization of Social Security 2.0 beta comes out in, say, January 2013, well, I'm pretty secure in saying that there is an element within the Democratic Party, and there's a word for them, and I'm not going to use it because I respect their opinions, and I like them. But they're going to respond by calling us hippies for objecting to, well, look, maybe it'll work out to put young workers Social Security in the stock market.
Oh, yeah, no, and don't forget, I remember this, too. You know, you follow away these little statements, and you think, what the? But that whole statement when Obama was talking about entitlements, and he's had the nerve to mention, the, you know, vaguely and kind of not straightforward, but he suggested that, well, maybe people like him don't need it. Bingo.
Right. So what's the harm in a little means testing?
Right, and that's the end of it. Everyone understands, not everyone, I'm saying in our little family here, when they means test the program in this country, that means it's for people who are poor or who can't get anything else. Thus, the program is marginalized and easy to finish off.
Right, and what will begin as rational means testing will proceed through Republican machinations to become really mean means testing.
Right, and the whole idea of the genius of the program that Roosevelt and his people came up with was everyone in, nobody out. I'm quite happy for Warren Buffett to get his fucking Medicare and Social Security. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I want him to have it. I want him to have it.
I don't have a problem with it.
I want Rockefellers on Social Security.
Ayn Rand. That bitch got it. Good for her.
Yeah.
Everybody in, nobody out.
See, maybe that's the fundamental disconnect that people like you and me and the rest of the Horn family have, Sandra, is that we look at these things in a way that other people don't or can't or won't. And that, I mean, you know, food stamps. You know what? I want everybody to have food stamps. Medicare? I want everybody to have Medicare. Social Security? I want everybody to have Social Security. I mean, because you know what? If you're raising two kids and you're making $45,000 a year in America, you ain't eating steak every night either.
Well, you know, and I know we've had this discussion before, but you know, the biggest barrier to the expanding of the social safety net, even when the marginal tax rate was 91%, is, like I said before, the, quote, diversity of the country, i.e., we don't want the niggas to get it, so it ain't going to happen. Because you don't have that problem in all the other OECD countries. Their safety net covers the whole of the population. The problem in this country is that there's so much hatred for various groups, gays, blacks, whoever, that they just can't find it in themselves to extend this shit to everybody. So we say that it's a market, the magic of the marketplace, and all other sort of excuses. But the biggest problem is that they don't, you know, they don't think certain people is deserving of it. I'm sorry, that's what it comes down to. That's why it's not here in this country. That's what I think. I think that explains everything about a good explanation for why we don't have single payer. You know, even Nixon believed in a minimum income. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And, you know, Andy just wrote in from Redwood City, Sandra, and he said, Tell Sandra, President Obama calls Social Security and Medicare an entitlement. It doesn't matter what we or you or us call it. So the term is now well-respected in the corporate media among corporatists and the Blue Dogs, DLC, Friends of the Chicago School. If these two programs, Andy says, are entitlements, then by definition, all private insurance companies are running entitlement programs. You pay a premium, have a contract, and expect that contract to be honored when you submit a claim or the policy matures. But hell, says Andy, Mr. Obama has put these programs on the chopping block and facilitates the Republican Karl Rove talking points with his use of the word entitlement.
Well, the problem is that people don't understand. I mean, when I hear entitlement, I can understand that it sounds like, well, yeah, I paid into it, so I'm entitled to it. That's the connection I make.
Right.
But we know what they're turning it into. That's why I refuse. I have to use insurance. Because if I say entitlement to people I'm talking to, they take the Karl Rove definition. Because that's what's been
Welfare.
Pounded into the heads of people. You know, they don't, when they hear entitlements, they don't make the connection that, listen, you dumbass, you weren't paid into it, so you're entitled to it. They can't seem to be, I don't know if it's bad education. I don't know what it is, Bob. You know me. I'm the last little snob. You know it's true. It's like, you know, what the fuck? Make some connections here. Critical thinking. Now, please. So, in the meanwhile, we have Obama talking about entitlements, and you and I are like, God damn. Because we know what it means, just like Andy just explained very clearly.
Yeah, and I get what Juanita meant in her call, too, when she says that, you know, the last human being that she knows of in the Senate is Bernie Sanders.
Yeah.
Now, here's a guy who is going to offer, if he hasn't already, legislation that just, you know, eliminates that stupid $106,000 cap.
Yeah. I mean, that would solve the problem, you know, for the next seven generations, if I may add.
If not 10, 12, 15,
yeah,
what have you. It might be forever.
Yeah, no, because, it, you know, we're talking, and yes, that would be a 12% or 6% tax on all them motherfuckers. So that's one way of taxing them.
And what have they got to complain about if we do that?
Oh, no, it's so gross that this is not an issue. But, you know, more importantly...
Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, more importantly is the idea that the fucking capital gains tax, you know, the fact that they can't even raise that 5 or 7% is shocking. You understand? Because these people earn all their income from capital gains, and that bitch is only 15%. It's absolutely criminal and damn near immoral that people aren't up in arms about that. Because you got all these assholes who don't do nothing. I mean, I want to grow up to sell derivatives. Fuck. Okay?
Hey, maybe you can sell Texas dead teacher life insurance derivatives. I mean,
but the whole argument that somehow capital gains is superior to your wages is absurd in this environment now. You don't even make no sense. They can pay.
But remember that they go on the offensive by saying that it's too much. They want the capital gains tax eliminated.
No, they want it eliminated, but I mean, it needs to, no, but it's a source of revenue that needs to be attacked. It has to be increased. It's incredible. I mean, it's just, the whole sort of arsenal that the rich have that can be exposed to taxation is damn near endless.
Yeah, well, I mean, and we've talked about this before. There has been in this country, Sandra, why is there not now a penny transaction tax on everything that takes place on Wall Street?
Well, that's the thing. Yeah, I mean, Tobin tax. I mean, it's a name for it. There's a theory out there. There's an economist who developed it. I mean, the thing is that Europe is embarking on, they're talking about some sort of Tobin tax.
Well, it's certainly not going to, a penny is, you know what, if investors leave the market over a penny.
Gone.
Exactly.
Not only that, but it needs to be disciplined because I'll go back to this one quadruple fucking derivative thing that's floating around. I mean, if you had some sort of transaction tax, you know, it'd be a lot less appealing to be doing these bets upon bets upon bets upon bets like we have, you know? The state is obligated to attack what is essentially a foreign occupier. That's what these sort of financial entities have become, because they're sapping the sort of life energy out of everything, as far as I can tell.
And so, if we raise the capital gains tax to 25%. Raise it to 30.
Yeah,
I don't care.
A penny
transaction tax on every trade, because you know what? The trading houses themselves have their own form of taxation. It's called a fee.
Exactly. No, listen. The percentage on their transaction plus making the capital gains 27% to 30% or whatever, or 25%. Listen. Them bitches will still be rich.
Yeah, it's not like they're not going to be able to afford lunch.
No, and it's just incredible. And the thing that's really disturbing to me is that, you know, there's this whole idea of state capacity, and then there's Weber's definition of the state being having a monopoly to do violence. Well, the state is also the entity that can tax. But somehow, that mechanism is out the window, where the people who are so-called representing us spend all their time protecting the wealth of the rich.
Right. And see, some of that, I think, you hear these little things that are out there. There's that one passage in McCulloch versus Maryland.
Yeah.
Where the Supreme Court remarks that the power to tax is the power to destroy.
Yeah.
And if I had my little Mr. Peabody time machine, I'd go back and make sure that that doesn't go into that opinion.
Well,
because it's one of those things that little right wingers hang on to with their nasty little claws sunk in all the way up to the quick.
No. But the thing is that they have no problems policing the citizenry. You see what I'm saying? The state is quite adept at doing that. And it used to be quite adept at taxing the rich. I mean, those marginal tax rates, that's not fantasy. That was real.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's hideous because the U.S., you know, with their Bretton Woods regime, you know, introduced all this shit to the world, you know, and now it's really coming back to screw us over so badly. It's stunning. I don't know.
The other place, and you and I are both in this same boat. I didn't like it when they did it to me, and when they did it to me, I was a much younger man. I'm still pissed off that I got to work my ass off to 67 to ever draw the first damn dime of Social Security. I want that shit gone backwards.
Yeah, no, and it should, and the way we have this kind of permanent high unemployment, the policymakers and the people who are designing these policies should be doing exactly that. They should roll back the ages so more people can basically get out of the labor market, because other people can get the jobs. I mean, these solutions aren't that difficult. And the fact that we don't have a government that's responsive to us is a huge problem, which I don't know if the ballot box is going to take care of. I mean, I've been laughing at old Mike Malloy. He is gone, man. He's out there.
I've been reading Brad Friedman long enough to think that I got no real faith in the ballot box anymore, as long as we're voting on video games.
Yeah. No, I'm not disagreeing with it. It's just kind of, well, I don't know. I mean, you know, like I started at the top of this call, which I'm still sort of confused about, you know, where the right is going to go with these entitlement, you know, I'm saying it, these insurance programs.
Well, I mean, I'm comfortable saying that they won't do an outright kill because they can't get away with it, but to see them still. I mean, see what happens to me? I go back to things, for instance, Cassie, you know, she's a sophomore at Princeton now, and she said, retirement, Bob, my generation can't even imagine being 40, let alone retired.
Right, so you're saying that whole generation is not even going to be paying attention to these sort of drastic changes that they'll be able to do.
Or they will pay attention enough to hear the right wing say, well, we're going to let you keep your money. Because remember, that's how the last raft of tax cuts got boondoggled in.
No, but that was before you had a total collapse of the economic, the financial system. I mean, trust me, I understand that the propaganda is real thick, but I do think a lot more people are much more skeptical of the financial system now than they were in 2005. They gotta be.
But by the same...
So for someone to suggest we're gonna, you know, make every, all the programs a 401, they might get laughed in the face with that one, because... Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. You know, maybe you're right about that.
Or some sort of hybrid, Sandra. You know, we're not going to completely do away with it, but we're gonna cut the rate, and we will not tax you if you put that much into your own 401k or whatever. You know, cut it by 2.2%, and the next election cycle, the Republicans will say, well, I want you to be able to keep more of your money. We're gonna make it 3%.
Yeah.
And so without ever telling anybody that they're killing Social Security, and by telling the younger generation of working people, well, you know, you can go spend it on the lottery, or you can go to Vegas, or hell, you know what? You could put it into a medical savings account or a Roth IRA or any of that silly horse shit. Well, what they're effectively doing, well, it's like the conversation you and I had when they struck the deal that cut the payroll tax by 2 percentage points. And you said, when is that ever going to get put back on?
Actually, it's going to get put back because all of a sudden Republicans have decided that's a tax cut they don't want. Do you know about this?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Yeah, which is, I think that's really interesting. It's like, wait. Now you don't want a tax cut to remain? It's just sick. It's different.
And if they do that, then the rate goes back up, and that gives them more room in a couple of years to say, we're going to cut by 2.5%, and you're going to take that money and invest it in the market.
Yeah, or some madness. I mean, no, I understand. But at the base of this is the total lack of leadership on the Democratic side, unless they're just two peas pod, you know what I mean, which is... What I'm beginning to think is the case is kind of good cop, bad cop, Democrat or Republican, right?
Yeah, well, no, it's not the first time it's run across my mind, because, like I said, I've said before, you know, maybe we're the rubes for saying, you know, well, why can't he be the kind of president we wanted him to be? Maybe he's being the kind of president he wants to be.
No, I'm past. I mean, I'm over that. That one's out the window. I don't, you know, I think that, yeah, no, that's why I said, you know, he might be ex-really effective president, not the weak one. But anyway, just a quick thought. Did you see that, I forget the guy who wrote that article. He used to be the coach of LSU. He wrote in the New York Times about there should be a farm league for the NFL, like baseball.
I didn't see it, but I'm not surprised to hear it.
Yeah, you know, because it's like, oh, you know, I guess the whole idea of it would take care of all the infractions in the college, because some people, you know, don't want to go to college. They just want to, you know, play football, but they're not physically ready. So why not set up this farm system where you can be paid to get ready to play in the NFL? I mean, I don't, you know, I don't know. My first thought was like, ew, but maybe you have any opinion about that?
Well, first of all, I think you're going to have a hard time wresting this multi-billion-dollar industry away from the colleges.
There's that, and also that's what I was out to ask you. How would they fund such a farm thing? You know, where would the funding come from? The NFL?
Yeah, I mean, if it's truly a farm system, because that's the way it works in baseball.
So the NFL would pay these young people to get their bodies right to go into the NFL.
Yeah, and they would, I suppose it would be structured in such a way as, you know, I don't know, maybe they play on Wednesdays. When does it, I mean, like a farm club.
Yeah.
You know, say a triple A baseball team loses money, but it puts, you know, it's a pretty good brand of baseball, and they put fans in the stands, and they, you know, they sell concessions and everything, and they might come close to a break even. And if they don't, the ownership packs up and moves on to somewhere else that will.
Right. I mean, I just, you know, because there's been a lot of sort of...
But there is a significant subsidy that flows downhill from the mother organization.
Yeah, so that would be in direct competition with the multi-billions that these universities get, though, right?
Yeah, because, I mean, if some kid who... You know, the real hot shots are not going to go to college, and... One of the things, and it had to be dealt with a couple of years ago, you know, where the NFL and the NCAA came to an agreement that, you know what, you cannot go and play NFL football until you've got 2 years under your belt in college.
No, I thought it was three. It's only two.
Is it three? Is it?
I think it's three. Yeah, I think it's three, because that's what the article suggesting, that the stint outside of the NFL for these young people would have to be 3 years, which is, I guess, the number of years a man needs extra to get big enough to play in the NFL or something.
But it's in a way, if you maybe you could interpose that as a layer between college and pro. But all you're doing, you know, one of the reasons that kids want to come out early if they think they have a prospect of going high in the draft, Sandra, and this is not a sporting thing, you know, this is a workers' issue, as we've discussed it in the past, is that the odds. You know, let's say you stay for that senior year out of loyalty to alma mater, right? I mean, you really care. You're trying to get an education. And on the third game of the season, you blow a knee.
Right.
Or something even more awful happens. Well, you know what? Nothing nice happens to you from the college's standpoint from that point on. Because,
they've got
roster requirements they've got to meet. You know, this ain't Woody Hayes football where you can have a home squad of 197.
Yeah, no, you're ass out. They're done with you, and you're gone, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I just, you know, I don't know. I just thought it was sort of, you know, it's interesting, and I guess all this is bubbling up because there's been just sort of nonstop scandals, right?
Well, I think they're finally coming to grips with the fact that these scandals, you're always going to, and this Miami scandal is so damn tawdry.
It's over the top. Come on now. I was just like, what?
No, really? You paid for the stripper's abortion? Really?
Yeah, no, it's just...
And then the pathetic quality of Miami saying, well, we don't know who this guy is. And, oh, yeah, you do. And they show the footage of the guy carrying the Miami flag out of the tunnel with the pelican, with the smoke and the fog and the guy... No, you know who we are. Yeah.
Right. No. And it's just, it is so, so much so that you have to hear Luther Campbell going on. I'm like, Luther Campbell? Shit. Anyway, no. I don't know. The Miami thing is hella entertaining. Listen, they probably cannot. They are just can't wait for the people to get on the football field. This has just been a disaster. The NFL.
At this point, Miami could go 0-12. Please just play. You know, as long as they're being allowed to play football. Because I don't know if you heard, but at first it was being said, well, you know, we'll never use the death penalty again because when we shut down SMU, we screwed the entire Southwest Conference. You know, that hurt players who were innocent. Blah 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 blah. And the honchos at the NCAA said, oh no, the death penalty's still on the table.
Oh.
And you know, if not this, who, what? And then you take into account that you want to know who's not needing any laxatives lately? Nick Saban at Alabama. Because he's got two of those crooked bastards from Miami on his staff.
Okay, yeah, no, you know what time it is. That's what I'm saying. All those programs, especially the high achieving ones, they all hella suspect. And you know, old Fugly down in Carolina, he was the one talking about paying folks, wasn't he? So they all know.
Yeah.
They all know the writing's on the wall. But I just wonder how it's going to resolve itself because, you know, come season time, everybody forgets because they just want to watch some football. So I know they...
And you know what? I'm that guy.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I want to see Dana Holgers. Because it was all small. It was small potatoes comparatively. But my beloved Mountaineers went through the ringer. And that friend of Jesus who turned out to be doing some sort of cloak and dagger Stalin-esque
sleaze program. I mean, the guy gets on the phone to a sports writer at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette and says, dig up some dirt on this Holgorsen guy for me, would you? And this, you know, this is the guy who said, well, it doesn't matter whether we win or lose. They're fine Christian young men we're turning out here in Morgantown. Oh, that shit must have turned to ashes in his mouth. So I just want to see him play some damn ball. And LSU is coming to Morgantown. And, you know, I don't know. I'll put a limb on eBay for a pair of good tickets to that.
Yeah, well, don't, you know, hide your cough there. Okay, listen, I'll let you go. Oh, I'll send this to you. It's this amazing animation of the star being eaten by a black hole that they said they saw.
Ooh, awesome.
Yeah, I'll send that to you now. Okay,
take care. I love that stuff. See you, Sandra.
Bye.
Bye now. This is Conversation Radio, just in case you were wondering. And let's see who is where. Hey, welcome to the program.
Brother Bob.
Cossack, what's happening, man?
I don't know much. It's always good to hear from Sandra.
Yeah, I think she's ready for some ball.
I think so.
And you know what? I'm ready. It has been a long, hot summer. And I'm ready to just be completely mindlessly diverted. I admit it. I'm shallow. I want one day a week where I can just go damn and recharge, you know?
Yeah. You know, I enjoy college ball, but I'm just waiting for my beloved Redskins to take the field and see what they can do.
You got any hope?
Actually, I do. This Beck kid seems to be, the real deal, maybe. I hope.
Well, you know, it is wait and see. I mean, I guess, what, Donovan wanted to go to Minnesota, didn't he?
Yeah. And as Sam Huff always says, you know, live in hope, die in despair. You remember Sam Huff, don't you?
Oh, yeah, and so does Jim Brown.
Oh, yeah. Hard-headed West Virginian.
Yeah, he's the one who told the story of every home in every coal camp in West Virginia had three photographs on the wall. Jesus Christ, John L. Lewis, and John F. Kennedy. Because that was the kind of home he grew up in.
Yeah. Oh, God. About the post office. Isn't that in the
Constitution? Yeah, it kind of is.
Yeah.
But being in the Constitution has never slowed down a teabagger now, has it?
And
so's the general welfare.
And wasn't Ben Franklin one of the people, the person... It said, you know, that was one of the main impetuses for ditching the Confederacy and writing up the Constitution in the first place?
Well, I mean, as was noted in the Prism series, there were a lot of reasons. One of them was democracy was getting out of hand.
Well, yeah. But... considering Ben Franklin was the first postmaster.
You know, by the time the teabaggers would get done with him, he'd probably be a communist.
God. Well, considering that, you heard about the Texas history curriculum, right?
There's a new one?
Yeah, they mention Estee Lauder, but they don't mention Washington.
Hmm. Oh, no. Please, no, that's got to be a joke.
No, that's dead serious. Estee Lauder and Phyllis Schlafly are mentioned, but Washington isn't.
But I thought they just got done with their standards, Cossack.
No, this is a new one.
because the other ones weren't weird enough?
Correct.
Jesus.
And with all these brilliant people deciding they're going to get rid of Social Security, what are you going to do with old farts like me?
Depends on how old an old fart like you is.
59?
Yeah, see, I don't, honestly, like I said with Sandra, I think they'll establish a window that goes to maybe 56, and nobody gets touched above it, and then it's a free market wonderland for everybody below it, and they're counting on the fact that they are dividing the forces to be significant enough to let them get the job done. But bear in mind, it's not going to be one fell swoop stuff. I don't think I've ever said that. This is going to be negative incrementalism at its absolute worst or finest, depending on how you view the process.
Oh, and speaking of Eric Cantor, you heard that no emergency funds for...
No, not without concomitant spending cuts.
Correct.
Really, really, Cossack, what... At this point, what is left to say about the people in his district?
Considering some of them were hit by Irene, I don't know.
And all of whom who felt the earthquake.
Exactly.
I mean, if I was a religious man, I'd be taking that very seriously. I wouldn't be in a humorous vein like Michelle Bachmann. But... No, I mean, this jackass is going to be up for re-election in November 2012. One, does the all-too-timid Democratic Party have a viable challenger for him? B, why aren't they already, maybe they are already, running ads about this in his district? And C, is it maybe time, Cossack, that this kind of advertising actually target the voters?
Yeah.
And by target the voters, I mean, and that sounds awful, I probably should pick a different word, focus on the voters by saying, you sent this guy to Congress. This is what he's done. Are you gonna do it again? If so, and there would probably have to be some focus group work with this, how damn dumb are you?
Yeah. Are you gonna let him do it to you again? You've been bent over and had... Are you gonna let it happen again?
Right.
I mean, jeez.
At what point? I mean, you're responsible for this. The rest of the, I don't know. Maybe that's what the script would say. The rest of the people of the United States are looking to the district of Virginia, understanding that you are the people responsible for sending that to the Congress of the United States. I guess that's just too confrontational, isn't it?
Oh, I don't know. It needs to be.
Well, yeah, that's my point. I mean, this is, we're getting perilously close to, and you know, run the same kind of ad in Minnesota. You have sicked that loopy, crazy, religiously hallucinated thing on us. What are we supposed to think of you? What happened to Minnesota Nice? How nice is that to do to the people, your fellow Americans?
Oh, by the way, it's the 7th District.
Of Virginia?
Yeah.
Jeebus. I mean, I don't think that's a crazy question to ask anymore.
No. I mean, yeah, the rest of the country is looking at Virginia and laughing because it's better to laugh than cry, but...
Right.
It's kind of ridiculous.
Well, more...
And, you know, to show you how idiotic these teabaggers are, a friend of my brother's, who has got three pensions, one federal, one military, Social Security. And he's militating for more of the same, for more cuts. And I keep on trying to say, don't you understand you're asking for them to cut your own pension? He doesn't. It doesn't penetrate. That's how stupid these people are. This literally does not penetrate their thick skulls. You know, this is like the Jackass drill, where the guy's literally sitting on the limb and sawing it off at the base, and he's sitting on it. And people are that stupid.
I hate to admit it, but you're right. What?
You would imagine people would have enough common sense not to do something of this nature. Yeah, they do, and they do it with
and recognizing that they do, Cossack. The next question is, how do you break that pattern? I mean, the sanctity of the ballot box includes, I suppose, the sanctity of doing really stupid things in it.
Well, yeah. Bachman keeps getting elected.
Yeah.
Cantor keeps getting elected.
Steve King in Iowa.
Yeah.
That goofball, yeah. I'm Gohmert in Texas.
Yep.
You know, the terror babies guy.
The other king in New York.
Yeah. But, you know, if they're in Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, Tennessee, Georgia, Florida, North, South Carolina, Kentucky, Texas, Oklahoma, those guys, and it's bad of me because, it flies in the face of stuff that I actually preach, and that is, you know, my tendency to say, forget about it, it's Chinatown.
Mm-hmm.
But really, there's some... Well, it goes back to what Dr. Dawkins said, doesn't it?
Yeah.
There are profound flaws within any system that allow not only for a person to, well, I mean, you're going to have idiots. I mean, you've always got an idiot that's one going to run for an office. But there are profound flaws in a system that allow a person to actually be considered as a viable candidate. Michelle Bachman, Rick Perry, Rick Santorum. You know, they all fall within that category.
Oh, and you heard about the verbal reaming that Dawkins gave to Perry.
Well, yeah, I read it on the show Friday night, I think.
Yeah. And there's an open and standing invitation for him to debate Perry.
Yeah, and that's not going to happen any more than Michelle Bachman's going to debate that 14-year-old. For the very same reasons.
Yeah. They'd have their rears handed to them.
Yeah.
God, we're just...
I know. Crazy.
And, of course, it's retribution from the Lord that the hurricane descended upon New York City. New York City!
Yeah.
just hey, don't know about
that. Cossack, I hate to say it. I got to roll on here.
All right. Let you run.
All right. We'll talk
Take
soon.
Care.
All right.
All
bye
right.
now.
Bye-bye.
And I hate to cut things short like that, but I'm going to have to cut the whole program short. There are matters back inside the house of a family nature that I have to deal with. We got through most of the show, though. That's always a bonus. So I will thank you all for your kind support of the program via your generous contributions, your gifts, via your participation. All the work that goes in on the part of the volunteers who make up the horn, thank you. And I'll be back either Thursday evening or Friday. For sure Friday, maybe Thursday. And, well, till then, take care. And I look forward to us talking again. Thanks always go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org is contained inside that address. Learn about it. Tell others about it, please. Thanks to Lottie in the chat room, Sparky in the chat room, our news ninjas Gene and Susan. Thanks to our blogger, Texas Betsy. Thanks to Reverbo, our op-ed columnist. Thanks to John Fox, our chief engineer, and many other things. Thanks to Ben Birch, who makes all the streams do what streams need to do in order for this program to reach you. WhiteRoseSociety.org. He never sends a bill, but he does need help. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.
Cussin' and discussin' with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Ah, geez, welcome to the special Sarah Palin edition of Head On with Bob Kincaid. I guess we gotta, don't we? We kind of gotta talk about Sarah Palin. Stuck in his thumb and pulled out a plum and said, "What a dim boy am I," John McCain. Lord God! I gotta admit, I was a little flummoxed. But then again, see, that's the thing. Right-wingers like McCain, Maverick, my ass, right-wingers like McCain really do listen to the right-wing blowhard gas bags on the radio. Because when, as soon as it was mentioned that he was considering a pro-life, a pro-choice running mate, you know, Limbaugh came right, "My friends, that would be political suicide. It would kill the Republican Party. Bring me a little boy and some Viagra and a few Oxycontins." But, yeah, typical. And he listened. See, look, this was since McCain got to go second, he was set up with an if-then scenario. His short list had two or three or four or five or ten names on it. And the way it worked was this. If Barack Obama had selected Hillary Clinton or some other woman as his running mate, then McCain would have picked a really pasty-faced, doughy white guy as his. Since, however, Barack Obama chose Joe Biden, he had no choice but to try to, to pick Sarah Palin. The Sarah Palin pick, to try to put it into perspective just a little bit, the Sarah Palin pick, Sarah Palin is the Harriet Myers of running mates. Her nomination is going to go over about as well as Harriet Myers's did. Oh, they're stuck with her, and they're going to have to put up with her. But if you get them liquored up or something like that and get them talking, the right-wingers will say, oh, no. Oh, no. But in light of the important issues of this political season, I do have one little soundbite from her opining on one of those important topics.
I think there should be more race prejudice. Less race prejudice.
Oh, wait a minute, that's Michael Palin. I get him confused. But this is it. Let's see. She doesn't like polar bears. She's petty and vindictive. If you haven't already seen it, we'll get in. Troopergate. Hey, Sherman, set the Wayback Machine for Clinton administration. Troopergate. Remember Troopergate? Well, guess what? Sarah Palin's got her own Troopergate. This is how petty and vindictive this nasty woman is. Her sister, now, I don't know, maybe some of this comes of being a beauty pageant type. I'm told, although I can't speak from experience, I'm told that it can be a very, very catty sort of a thing, beauty pageants. But Sarah Palin comes from a beauty pageant background, you know, sort of JonBenet all grown up, if you will. And so her sister got married to this Alaska state trooper. And that marriage, you know, now I understand that marriage is supposed to be, if you're a right winger, between one man and one woe man. And Jesus said divorce was a real no-no. But apparently, Sarah Palin's sister and some Alaska state trooper decided to tie the knot. And somehow or another, the knot came untied. And there was a nasty, nasty little divorce that followed. And in the short time, year and a half, that Sarah Palin has been governor of Alaska, she used her position as governor to demand that the head of the Alaska State Police fire her former brother-in-law. And when the commandant of the Alaska State Police said, Madam Governor, I got no grounds to fire him. I won't fire him. She said, well, screw you, buddy. You're fired. Man, that's some pig-licking family values, isn't it? I mean, wasn't even a year and a half in office, a year in office, and started abusing the power of the office of governor. So I guess we got an idea of what's coming. But yeah, there's not a lot of it, but there are some sound bites. We get some idea of how Sarah Palin thinks.
Nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition.
Oh damn, that was Michael Palin again. I've got all my sound bites mixed up. I think I'd prefer Michael Palin anyway.
Fireball!
Brucia lui, la vicina, ma dello macingo, della viota,
press crimble, fra dicadingle, dangle, dongle.
It makes about as much sense as Repiglick and economic policy, doesn't it? Of course, Sarah Palin knows about as much about economic policy as I know about deep space astrogation, but, you know, who the hell am I? But this is a... It's a surprisingly tone-deaf choice, although it is purely politically cynical. What we have here, I mean, let's just deal with it. What we have here is, in light of the past convention and the profound excitement that Barack Obama generated, we have in the old late 94's choice for vice president, we have the manifestation of a whiter shade of Palin. That one just came to me. Sorry. And no, Fox News, you bunch of damn dummies. She is not. Oh God. Being in Alaska doesn't make her qualified to deal with the Russians. I don't care what Brian Kilmeade said. Or Steve Ducey. Brian Kilmeade said that Senator Joe Biden will eat her alive, and Steve Ducey disagreed. Lord, you can't buy this stuff. You couldn't pay to have this written. This is just too precious.
Trying to think through as a strategist what I would do if, from the Democratic standpoint. And look, one thing she's got going for it, and she'll get picked on about not being up for the presidency, but her expectations are going to be so low that anything she does that exceeds them, you know, politics about exceeding expectations. We talked about this in the break.
Yep.
What is Joe Biden going to do? I mean, with Joe, who knows how to debate, but
he's
going to
capitalize. He has no international relations experience. He's not the chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee.
Doesn't need it. John McCain, that's totally his strength, right?
But the other thing about her, she does know about international relations because she is right up there in Alaska, right next door to Russia.
Believe me, Steve, it had nothing to do with that.
As videographer and chat room moderator ELO noted, I guess that makes me a veterinarian because I've got a cat. Lord God. And how about that? There are diminished expectations. Nobody expects anything of her. So what are we saying, that Sarah Palin gets a pass? She gets the political equivalent of the helmet and elbow pads and knee pads? So what? She's the political equivalent of the scrawlings that your child brings home from preschool and you put them up on the refrigerator and go, that's art, you know, because of the source? This is amazing. This is amazing. And by some sick miracle, some twisted demonic alteration of the fabric of the universe, if John McCain should become elected, and then, as many of us expect, given his cancerous history and everything, should shuffle off this mortal coil while in office, dear Jesus, we're going to get Dan Quayle in drag for the President of the United States. It's horrifying. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program. Hey, Susan, what's up?
Oh, it gets worse. For all of you people who thought her says the Dan Quayle in drag, her reference to Hillary Clinton was gracious and wonderful, and you are considering her because of that. Well, let's go back.
I don't think there's anybody in the audience who is, but, yeah, generally, rhetorically speaking, yes.
Yeah, just in case. This is courtesy of Talking Points Memo. Together on stage with Janet Napolitano in a Newsweek leadership forum a while back, she wasn't as charitable towards Hillary. She said, quote, she felt kind of bad. She couldn't support a woman, but she didn't like Clinton's whining, unquote.
Yeah, in fact, I've got the audio if you want to go ahead and play that, if we want to go ahead and play that. Yeah, let's listen to her.
When you look at the coverage, when you listen to the conversations, what do you see?
Well, you know, I think fair or unfair, I do think it is a more concentrated criticism that Hillary gets on so many fronts. I think that's unfortunate. But fair or unfair, I think she does herself a disservice to even mention it, really. I mean, you got to plow through that. You have to know what you're getting into, which I say this with all due respect to Hillary Clinton and to her experience and to her passion for changing the status quo also. But when I hear a statement like that coming from a woman candidate with any kind of perceived whine about that excess criticism or, you know, maybe a sharper microscope put on her, I think, man, that doesn't do us any good. Women in politics, women in general wanting to progress this country, I don't think it bodes well for her, a statement like that. Because, again, fair or unfair, it is there. I think that's reality, and I think it's a given. I think people can just accept that she is going to be under that sharper microscope. So be it. I mean, work harder. Prove yourself to an even greater degree that you're capable, that you're going to be the best candidate, and that, of course, is what she wants us to believe at this point. So it bothers me a little bit hearing her bring that attention to herself on that level.
Pardon me, did she say anything except accuse Hillary Clinton of whining?
So, may I be a trifle blunt?
Sure.
Okay. First of all, already today I have heard the right-wingers use her Down syndrome child as a political piece. That ought to make the people with disabilities advocates just see red screaming purple hissy fits. But secondly, Hillary Clinton, no matter whether you agreed with her, disagreed with her, or were up in the air, the one thing you had to give that woman, she was qualified.
Beyond a shadow of a doubt.
And the one thing you can say about Sarah Palin, and Sarah, sorry about this, but the only reason you were chosen to be John McCain's vice presidential nominee is because of what is between your legs and no other reason. And that is a piss poor reason to be chosen for high office in this country.
Well, that's what I mean. This was a political, this was the highest form of political cynicism. Had Barack Obama chosen a woman, McCain would have chosen a white guy.
Yeah. If McCain wanted to choose a woman, why didn't he pick somebody like Hutchinson? I hate her guts, but I at least have to admit she's qualified.
Why? Because Kay Bailey Hutchinson, Kay Bailey Hutchinson is icky, and this is, you gotta understand, Susan, this is a manifestation of all of the right wing, pathologies.
Yeah,
Sarah Palin is a past hottie, and of course, you know, so naturally, what you see here is the right-wing determination that a woman has to be stunningly beautiful in order to have validity. They cannot see inner beauty. And, of course, there's Flush Flimball out there that for years has been referring to feminazis and saying that the National Organization of Women is comprised of women too ugly to get men to pay attention to them. So what you get here, you know, she is not, going back to Monty Python again, not unattractive to men. And she's and she's got that whole, you know, five children. She's got that whole Diana Earth Mother thing going on.
So she can breed. Any idiot can breed. A cockroach can breed.
No, that is the highest calling of womanhood in God's creation, is to bring forth the fruit of her loins.
A cockroach can breed.
Yeah, but see, you say that. That's not how the right wing thinks. They're, what I'm trying to get across to you, while you and I look at this, Susan, and we think, you know, wow, this is really stupid. This is Dan Quayle in drag. There are right wingers out there going, this was brilliant. She's truly pro-life, and she's got the family to prove it. She has given birth five times. You know, that last time she gave birth without even appearing to be pregnant. She may be even holy and stuff. You know this part, right, Susan?
Oh yeah, I am.
She announced her fifth pregnancy supposedly in her seventh month.
Mm-hmm.
And in her seventh month of pregnancy, mind you, her fifth, she didn't even have the little Hollywood baby bump going on.
Mm-hmm.
2 months later, she announces that she has given birth. I guess there was a star over Anchorage. And three wise guys showed up on the news to announce the good news. No, she announced she'd given birth, and 2 days later, ladies in the audience, 2 days later, she's back in the governor's office. I mean, this is like one of the women out of Pearl S. Buck's the Good Earth, where you're just, you know, hoeing along and boop, there's the baby. Okay, keep hoeing.
Yeah.
She's one of those, she's a tough, tough woman from America's last frontier. That's how it is up there. So she gives birth, and two days later, she's back in the governor's office. Meanwhile, her 16-year-old fundamentalist pro-life daughter was mysteriously out of school for months on end with a mysterious case of mono.
With a case of romantic fever.
What they used to call the kissing disease.
Yeah, I would love to see a DNA test.
And I realize that's cheap and tawdry, but, you know, what the heck?
If the right wingers can do it, so can we. But, you know,
you know, I just want to see her at the, Madam Governor, could you please tell us the airspeed velocity of an unladen sparrow? Yeah, I want that. I want hard questions. Yeah. Well, ma'am, what do you think? A list of, you know, maybe we could get Eugene Finnerman to write the list of questions.
Yeah, the whole thing is just condescension of a massive, it's an insult. Every woman in this country.
What does it say? What does it say when old 894 can't even get Dr. Rice to run with him?
Yeah, and the sad thing is, a lot of women in this country don't even realize it. And the terrifying thing is, she pronounces nuclear like Bush does.
No.
Oh yeah.
She says nuclear.
Yep. Oh, God, help us all.
Dan Quayle in drag. Next thing you know, she's going to start telling us how to spell potato.
Oh, God, help us.
And they'll have to send her on a Latin American tour, and she'll tell us she wished she'd studied more Latin in high school.
Yeah, you know, the Republicans keep saying they're against affirmative action. Well, if this isn't affirmative action, what is it?
Well, and McCain just lost the whole inexperienced argument, too.
Oh, yeah, big time. And, hey, Sarah, don't expect Joe Biden to go easy on you.
Oh, but that's the thing. If Joe Biden goes rough on her, Susan, they'll say he was ungentlemanly.
Oh, he is going to be a perfect gentleman, and he's going to chop her into bitsy-bitsy pieces because he learned the fine art of debating women against the best in the world, against Hillary Clinton.
Well, I think, and that's another thing I think this points up, Susan, is it is utterly necessary. Now, we were talking last night toward the end of the program about the necessity for the Clintons to get out and work Appalachia and work, work the Midwest and so forth. Well, Hillary's really got to hit the hustings now, and frankly, tear this woman to pieces, because this woman who has the do you know what she was before she was governor of Alaska? She was mayor of like Moose Nipple. I mean, there's not a lot of big cities in Alaska, and this wasn't one of them.
Yeah, I know.
Maybe it's the town where they shot the opening credits to Northern Exposure or something, but without all the cool people.
Yeah. I mean, there's nobody there. And before that, you know where she lived?
Where?
Northern Idaho, otherwise known as the birthplace of the Order.
She's got, as far as the Wingnuts are concerned, she's got all of her bases covered, doesn't she?
She's a freak.
That's another good one. I'm having a couple of good nights, Moose Nipple.
Yeah, I love that one. And hey, to before I get off, I want to end up on a high note. Can our guy give a speech, or can he give a speech?
And that's the thing I hate the most about this stupid Sarah Palin revelation, is that, our buddy David in South Carolina pointed this out to me in an email earlier, you can't find a word about Obama's speech now.
Oh, I did. I found it all over the net.
I know, but in terms of for-profit media coverage.
Whoever expected
me. Welcome to Sarah Palin. Welcome to the Sarah Palin News Network. Yeah.
The thing that got me was, I watched the speech on the Span. I watched good stuff on Span, and afterwards though, I flipped over to MSNBC because I wanted to hear what the for-profit media was saying. And I got there just in time to hear Pat Buchanan of all people positively gushing about this was the greatest political speech since before Kennedy. He had heard them all, Kennedy, Martin Luther King, all of them. This beat them all.
And you want an odd coincidence? In the 2000 primaries, guess who Sarah Palin voted for?
Pat Buchanan?
That would be correct. You want to go for the bonus round? Yeah, she's a Buchananite. You know, Hitler wasn't such a bad guy, Buchanan. Yeah, that Pat Buchanan. Amazing. Amazing.
And Pat Buchanan has already come out and said McCain is a disaster.
You know, it's tough when I find myself agreeing with that old freak, but you got it.
I really hate agreeing with him on anything, but he actually did. I mean, it's point.
Yeah, I'd like to see Hillary and this woman have a few minutes together. You called me a whiner. You called me a whiner. Come here. It's one of those where you put the arm around and you just sort of walk them toward the. You called me a what?
Yeah. What? The other neat thing about the for-profit media last night was Matthews saying, I'm going to be criticized if I say Obama inspired me. Ah, hell, let him criticize. That was an exact quote.
Good.
I thought that was cool.
And, you know, I'm seeing questions about, you know, is he going to get the MILF vote now? Oh, God, no. Susan, have a great weekend and a great Labor Day.
You too.
All right, talk to you soon.
Okay.
All right, bye-bye. And we'll just keep things rolling along. It is, after all, Friday. Let's try to get as many conversations in as we can. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, Philip.
Hey, Philip, what's up?
Well, let's start off with a real positive thing first. Let's, everybody in the chat room and everybody else, big, big round of applause to you and everybody that did the election coverage over the past week. It really was a lot of work, and I just want to take my hat off to you again for all the hard work that you did with it.
Thank you very kindly. It was four very, very intense days, and the fact that Guy and Mark were able to do such a heroic job out there just amazes me. It just amazes me.
Absolutely fantastic. So let nobody say that independent, non-commercial radio can't be done. Now, the Sarah Palin person.
Yeah, and I was just looking. I just saw a Photoshopped McCain-Palin ad on Democratic Underground, because I put a thread up there inviting folks to share their thoughts about this this evening. And it's a picture of Anna Nicole Smith with that old guy that she married. Just says McCain Palin.
Oh, that's got to go on the front page of your website.
Oh, that's a beautiful thing. It is.
Ah, how beautiful. Well, you know what they're doing in the McCain campaign is they're trying to get all these insane dumbasses that kept wringing their hands and gnashing their teeth and everything. When Hillary didn't get the nomination, oh, my God, what are we going to do? So they're trying to get those people to come over to the McCain campaign. Now, this Sarah Palin is going to piss off the right-wing knuckle-dragger Christian Taliban people because she opposes same-sex marriages, and she says that she has some gay friends, and she's receptive to gay and lesbian concerns about discrimination, but she also vetoed a bill that would have said state benefits for homosexuals in her state. So she kind of likes gays, but she really doesn't. And I think a lot of the Christian Taliban are going to notice that if that gets out. I'm sure McCain and his camp will keep them undercover.
Well, I think so. And she's not going to, she's certainly, she can't come out and say anything positive about the gay community, the LGBT community, Phil, because she was chosen specifically for her proven breeding abilities and the fact that she's pro-life.
Oh, yeah, she's pro-life. As a matter of fact, she sponsored a debate, an open debate, on whether creationism should be taught in schools along with...
Yeah, she's also one of those people who thinks that the Earth is younger, slightly younger than the written recipe for beer.
So here we have another drooling, knuckle-dragging dumbass. That's not really going to help the McCain campaign. I think, if anything, this is a boost to the Obama-Biden campaign. Because Joe Biden, he is a smart enough man, in my opinion, politically, where he'll be able to tear her apart and rip her up and down and change her name to Sally in a way where it won't be like he's being mad or cruel to her, but letting her have it.